And mere second.
Here on Zoom.
No, on Zoom. It's like
Fulton Coast.
Here.
Armin Farr, Christian Flournoy,
Present.
Ezra Galbraith,
Here.
Isabella Gale, Lawrence Hahn, Bansh Kakra,
Present.
Sion Kim, Catherine Christopa, Yasmima Su, Jeffrey Mui, Ellie Porter, John Purcell, Hayden Specter,
Present.
Jocelyn Swaby, Christian Tarla, Thor Wagsback, Alexander Walters,
Here.
Hayden Watkins,
Here.
Zachary Abu,
Here.
Eric Yao,
Here.
Kennedy Young,
Cornell University is located on the traditional homelands of the Gaigahono. The Gaigahono are members of the Haudenosaunee Confederacy, an alliance of six sovereign nations with a historic and contemporary presence on this land. The Confederacy precedes the establishment of Cornell University, New York State, and the United States of America. We acknowledge the painful history of Gaigahono dispossession and honor the ongoing connection of Gaigahono people, past and present, to these lands and waters. Please review the February 26th meeting minutes.
I don't see too many people about that.
They are not.
Okay, are there minutes? Other minutes? Okay.
No.
Anyway, there are no minutes. Apologies. Okay, we'll move straight to communications, past consent calendar, to reports of officers, committees, and liaisons. Representative Bloom.
Hi guys, just a little update on Environmental Committee. We are tabling again tomorrow. It's going to be in Olin Library, I think from like 1 to 4, somewhere in that like area. We also have a meeting coming up on Sunday, 5 to 6. That's our usual meeting time. And you may have noticed that Resolution 70, we might not get to it today, but that is the calling on Cornell to phase out single-use plastics. So that's kind of the initiative I've been working on lately. With plastic-free Cornell. That's the other thing.
Representative Galbraith.
Getting static. Okay, I think we're good. Dining committee will be meeting this Monday at 4:45, I believe, in PSB. Please see me if you want a confirmed location. We're going to be considering, we're going to be rediscussing resolution six. Oh, by PSB. I will need to get confirmation on that, so just reach out to me if needed. We'll be considering a few resolutions. The discussion will resume on resolution six, which is expanding meal plan options for the Veterans House and the equity engagement community. My hope is that we'll finally return it. Well, we will properly return it to assembly next week. In addition, we will be reviewing the resolution to implement the reusable cup program at the campus cafe locations and on expanding our allergen-friendly options.
Any further reports of officers, committees, and liaisons? Representative Agarwal.
Hi guys, Student Health Advisory Committee's next meeting is going to be with Cornell Health on March 18th from 4:30 to 5:30 p.m. Right now, we are going to be working on adding transportation between North Campus and potentially West Campus to Cornell Health for students who are sick and can't, walk there. And then we're also looking into giving more feedback on various programs at Cornell Health. And lastly, we've been working on adding healthcare vending machines, which you'll see as resolution 62 today.
The reports, Representative Chaudhary, is this about the University Assembly? Okay.
Big things in the world of University Assembly. I think we have four resolutions up on the table next week, all from the Campus Codes Committee in relation to like student code of conduct adjacent things, as well as like the history behind that as well. A lot of people here have a lot of strong opinions about that. So if you're interested in learning more, feel free to reach out.
Representative Porter, was your announcement relevant to freshman representative activities? Is your announcement relevant to pre freshman representative activities? Or okay, then Representative Porter.
Hi, so Jay, Dylan, and I will be tabling next Tuesday. It'll be around like 4 p.m., maybe 5 p.m. TBD, but I'll update my Instagram as well as send out an email. Thank you so much.
Representative Toronto.
Same as every week. International Students Committee has vacancies. I'm glad we have an audience today. If there's any international students that would like to join or are just, I don't know, interested in helping them out, please let me know after assembly. Thanks.
I have one report. I did have a meeting this morning with the administration relevant to summer experience grant and students helping students grant. I'll have a much more like detailed summary for anyone interested in talking to me. And then also I'll be talking with Representative Carson and Representative Chaudhary about the grant related resolution and those types of policies and initiatives. So if you are interested, please let me know. I'm happy to say that in the 8 or so years of the Summer Experience Grant existing, a germ of an idea between the Student Assembly and originally Arts and Sciences, now the entire campus. The Student Assembly's contribution out of the near $5 million that has been distributed through this grant is just over 900,000 of those dollars. So we can be very proud of the heritage of our organization, continued work, and hopefully expansions to these projects. Any further reports? Okay, seeing none. Like to motion to move appointments and vacancies above presentations for a brief appointment to the Financial Aid Review Committee chairship. Right.
Second.
Your second. Is there dissent? Okay, seeing none. Appointments and vacancies is now moved to right now. I'd like to appoint Representative Tarala to chair the Financial Aid Review Committee. Is there a second?
Second.
Their dissent. Okay, seeing none, a chair appointment is made, and we will now move to presentations, where we have the Committee on the Future of the American University. I'll now invite the presenters to the floor.
Thank you. We have slides. Could we get those up? Is this mic on?
Yeah.
Okay,
The mic is
great.
not on, but Eric can the okay, there's slides are loading.
Thank you. That is listen.
For the representatives who might not be able to see the TV, the slides are also in box.
Okay, great. Hello, my name is Phoebe Sanger. So I'm a professor in information science and science and technology studies. I'm one of the co-chairs of the Future of the American University Committee. One of my other co-chairs is on Zoom. Praveen, would you like to introduce yourself?
Hi, everybody. I don't know if you can hear me. Hopefully, you can. My name is Praveen Sethupathi. I am a professor in biomedical and translational sciences at Cornell.
So the Provost Committee on the Future of the American University was set up in September. Next slide, please. And the goal of the committee is to look at this current, quite complex moment in higher education and to use this moment as an opportunity to think long term about the strategic directions of the university and to lay a path for success for the coming decades, up to 50 years in the future. The way that we're doing this is through a community conversation. We are a faculty-led, faculty-run committee, but we recognize we don't have the expertise needed to answer these questions. So since November, we've been engaged in an intense process of listening to stakeholders in the university and outside the university, people who are critics of the university, as well as people who are boosters and who love Cornell and care about where we're going. And our meeting with you is part of that process. And the goal is to understand better what people's concerns are and to identify opportunities and principles moving forward. Next slide, please. So we are considering, in particular, three core issues. The first is the rapid pace of technological change. You guys know that AI is making an enormous impact on the university today. But we're not only looking at that, we're also thinking about the impact over the last 20 years of things like smartphones, ubiquitous access to internet, the way that that's transformed our access to information and knowledge, but it's also introduced all kinds of challenges and problems like isolation, mental health challenges, political polarization, and so on. The second issue is the changing relationship with the federal government. And the ways that that's changing the longstanding understanding of what an R1 university like ours might be. And finally, we're thinking about the loss of public trust, which has been something that's been simmering over the past decade, but now is really coming to the fore. Next slide, please. So we're thinking about how those affect the core university missions, which we define as undergraduate education, graduate and professional education, research and scholarship, and public impact and community engagement. Next slide. So, as I mentioned, the way we're structuring this is as a community conversation, and we're now at the tail end of a long series of community events, targeted meetings with stakeholders. We've now met between all of our activities with over 1,800 stakeholders. We have advisory panels that advise our faculty committee from other points of view, and we've been writing a column in the Daily Sun, which we encourage you to follow. Around mid-April, we will have a draft report ready, and we'll have a variety of feedback sessions to get people's input on that. And so, one question I have for the Student Assembly today is what is the best way for us to get input from a wide array of students on campus to this report? And if you have suggestions for us, we would love to hear that. And the final report will be released over the summer. Next slide. So, one thing I want to tell you about is the feedback that we've been getting from all these stakeholders on issues around undergraduate education specifically, and to get your input about what you think about this. The main kinds of issues that we have been hearing about, the first is issues around accessibility, the high cost of education, the difficulty of knowing how much you're going to pay until you're really late in the process, and the ways in which the admissions process can be really difficult to know whether you can get in. A second set of issues is around the core skills that the university should teach to figure out which of the core skills that we've always taught, like critical thinking, are still important. But we also need new core skills for the 21st century, AI skills being one obvious example. And one of the things that we've heard a lot from employers is that one thing that students really need and are no longer coming in with is these soft skills, knowing how to work with a diverse team of people who may disagree with each other, handling conflicts, understanding the kind of the norms in the workforce and so on, and that's something that we're going to have to lean into. In terms of pedagogy, it's clear that we need to make some changes to our pedagogy to better reach digital-first students who are used to getting information in a very different way than prior generations, and to make our pedagogy be really engaging and helpful for people who want to look up information on their own and not just sit in a lecture listening to people. There's also concerns about rigor. We've heard both about grade inflation and about grade deflation at Cornell, so concerns about how well your grades actually reflect what you're doing, and questions around accountability for learning, holding faculty responsible for what they're teaching in the classroom and how they're teaching. Finally, there's a lot of discussion around pluralism, diversity, which is both viewpoint diversity and other forms of diversity. And one thing that's clear across all these conversations is that the ability to engage across difference is missing for a lot of our students and for quite a few of our faculty. And that the ability to do that kind of engagement is going to be really crucial for the next century and something we're going to have to lean into in a principled way. So that's what we have been hearing and what we've been talking about. But I'm here to hear what you guys care about and where you guys want to see the university going. And I spoke with Zora about this earlier this week, and she suggested that maybe we could do this a little bit interactively. There's so many students here, and I really want to hear all of your perspective, especially with your expertise in what's happening at this university and what students care about. So what I would propose to do is that we spend a couple of minutes on an exercise where you guys can brainstorm a little bit about what you want this committee to be focusing on and doing. And then after that, we'll open up in the regular way for questions. Is that okay? Okay, next slide. So here's what I would like us to do. So what I'd like you to do is to get into groups of two or three. I'm going to give you a paper and list some of the key challenges in Cornell's undergraduate education from your perspective. What is it that students are really grappling with and would like to see differently? Next slide. Next slide. It is? Oh, that's too bad. Okay, well, I'll tell you. The other thing I would like you to do is then to think, if you had a magic wand and you could change anything at Cornell without regard to the kinds of constraints that we're all stuck with day to day, and thinking, what would you change about Cornell? Okay. All right, I've got paper and pens I'll hand out in case you don't.
If anyone in the audience wants to give their feedback, we're also taking advantage of the fact that there's a large student population present. If you want to write any answers down, help the committee out. A great time if you have like resolution ideas, big trends that you've been noticing that you feel like administration has been ignoring. Include them in as many places as you can. I expect to see everyone talking to each other, mouths moving. I want to hear from every mic at some point in these 30 minutes. Don't look at me like that. Yeah, this is true.
Something.
Great. It was all right, who had the idea? So, yeah.
I was like, no, like, I just came out that she just did as he went out to the days.
We have another minute before we go to the next step.
Okay. Are we ready? So first, I'm going to want to get all those papers from you at the end because I want to make sure all these ideas are captured for the committee. But is there anything that people want to bring up right now from your concerns?
I'm gonna circle. Representative Chaudhry.
Hi. So first off, thank you for coming in today and thank you for doing this. I think most of the time when the student assembly gets presentations, we usually just have people talk to us for like an hour straight and the audience is just listening there with like a tiny like presentation in the background and no one takes a lot away from this. So I think this is a much more productive way of doing something. So shout out to Zora, shout out to you guys. This is really, really great. Now, when it comes to Cornell, I think there's a lot of problems. I think when we have like an ethos of like any person, any study that inherently links to this idea of like any dream. But I do think the university over time has evolved in general alongside with higher education to kind of be an altruism killer. I think when I think about like Ishan in high school, applying into Cornell or like applying to university in general, students are like motivated to write about like their big dreams in the world, what they want to go and do and change and things like that. But then when you come to Cornell and then you see students leave Cornell as well, especially the places you see students go, that isn't necessarily reflected, whether that be going into like big law, big tech, the world of finance. And that's not to say that any of these careers are bad necessarily. It's just that like when you have this ethos of like any person, any study, or to do the greatest good, you want to create a group of citizens who are going to go out there into their own local communities around the world to go and actually do the greatest good. And that's not what's happening right now. When you think about like why this happens, I think
for a lot of different reasons. Two of the main ones. Number one, just like high costs. I think you already addressed in your presentation a little bit. When you have a university that has such a high sticker price on there, it creates a lot of financial pressure, especially for students who are in like low or middle income classes that just like need to go and like go into these high paying jobs to go and sustain and like survive. The other thing is just like high pressure. I think the university creates this environment where like students are kind of funneled into these different like realms, whether that be like big law, big tech, like these big business clubs on campus. Again, none of them are bad necessarily, but that's just the culture that we as a university have. And it's not unique to Cornell. It's kind of unique to all of like higher ed, especially when you get towards more higher ranking institutions as well. And that creates a really bad like campus culture. Mental health is a big problem here at Cornell. Sonny and I were talking about how there's not a lot of access to resources for that. So when you think about the future of higher education, you should be thinking about it, how you can mold students, but also how you can support students at the same time. Now universities can actually function as a well-meaning backbone for student support. Now, when it comes to like core skills you should teach, I think Cornell is really at an advantage that we are a land grant institution and we have to lean into that just so much more. We have a huge cooperative extension program that I don't think that most students realize we have, nor most students really take advantage of. We do a lot of really great community impact, especially on the graduate side of things, but at the undergrad side of things, it's very, very low. At the Brooks School, we have an engaged learning requirement that, in my opinion, I think should be cross-applied to the entire university, where students should be forced to go out into a community and take what they're learning inside a classroom and go outside and apply it to make the world just a little bit of a better place in some way, shape, or form. And I think that's the big ethos, and that's really the starting place for where the university should look for and those types of skills along the way that you need to go and build students up to make future leaders.
Thank you.
Representative Ehrlich.
Well, first of all, I want to echo pretty much everything Yishan said, and also thank you for being here. I read the newest column this morning, and it was actually really good. And I wanted to restate one thing in there about making sure students are developing soft skills, that they're learning humanistic skills, because I think a lot of students are losing that. So really glad that you all are talking about that. But a couple other things I wrote down that I think are important that a lot of students care about. I'd like the university to stop going after student protesters. That would be really great. I'd like the university to stop bowing to fascists and giving them $30 million disbursements. And I would also like the university to support our local community. I remember a few months ago we offered to give TCAT $30,000 when they needed $500,000 to keep operating. And fun fact, we also, this university fines TCAT regularly. So, like, our buses are actually late because the university is taking money from TCAT. So, I would like the university to support our local community, public schools here. I mean, we're tax exempt. So, there's a lot of money we should be giving the community that we're not. So, I know that a few of those things were maybe like political issues, but I would like the university to do things that are supportive of its students and its community. Yeah.
Thank you.
Representative Spector. I have a few things. The first is I would like to echo what others have said about mental health resources on this campus, especially when students get overwhelmed by the amount of work they have. Like oftentimes they don't even have time to go see a therapist. It gets so overwhelming. And at that point, there's nothing to do except for try and push through it or just, I don't know, quit. The other thing is that Cornell has a very competitive culture. I'm sure you have all heard about, the club business clubs having 5 billion interviews and having a less than 1% acceptance rate. And I mean, even the clubs that don't have that, they have like a competitive culture within them where everybody needs to be like the top dog, either socially or the best person in there. Like there's just no reason for that. And there needs to be a culture shift at Cornell because that's also contributing massively to some of the mental health crises on this campus. There have been, I've heard a lot of issues regarding professors providing both religious and health accommodations. The first is that I've heard of a lot of students like they'll be requesting to take a quiz at a different time if it's like a fast day or things like that. And the professors, some of them have written some really nasty emails to these students.
And there needs to be some accountability for that. They shouldn't be able to, A, write really nasty emails, and B, they shouldn't be able to deny these religious accommodations. And just today, I was talking to a girl who was sobbing in the bathroom because she spent all this morning in the ER because she had an injury to her eye and was blinded in one eye, and her professor was still making her take an exam tonight. Her options were either have it count like, the other exams just count more, which she felt wasn't fair, or take it tonight. So she is planning. I mean, she's taking it tonight, but I hope it goes well for her. But there's no reason for somebody who literally was in the ER to be forced to take an exam like that. It's terrible. I think that's mostly what I had to say.
Thank you.
Representative Galbraith.
I want to echo what Representative Spector just said about religious accommodations, but I want to add student organizations onto that as well. I've had more than one situation which I was like leaving service on Rosh Hashanah, and someone says to me, "Oh, I have to go to this club meeting. They're making me go, even though it's the holiday." And seemingly everyone I've asked, whether in organizations Hillel, Mecca, also in OSMM and CURW, have s indicated there's not really an enforcement mechanism for student organizations right now. So it's really important that we implement something like that. The other thing we need is more transparency in student housing, especially given today's revelation about the building downtown, whose name I'm blanking on, but I think you know what I think most of you know what I'm talking about. And that, the process is just not transparent, both in the sense that people don't always know how to request like housing that will be accommodating to their disability, to their religious needs. And I think anyone who's been put in like a quintuple or a forced triple kind of came at it completely blindsided. So I think people need to understand what the possibilities are, certainly if we're going to force them to sign a housing agreement.
Thank you.
Vice President Young.
Thanks. I had a couple of things. One, Cornell needs to remove themselves and any influences they have over anything covered by the student activity fee. Two, Cornell needs to protect and continue to fund spaces that cater to marginalized groups. There's no reason why our empowerment spaces or spaces like Wadi are operating off of very small budgets and very minimally this year. And then I want to emphasize all the points made before just to make sure that it's really embedded. And then also to Representative Chaudhuri's point about high cost, but not only is it high cost, but like Cornell is actively taking money from students. So it's like if I'm a person on financial aid and I receive an outside scholarship, why is my grant then decreased the amount of my outside scholarship? I'm clearly someone in need of the money, so it's no reason why it should be taken from me. Or like I applied to emergency fund, received the money, had to apply for a loan this semester. My loan was short of the amount of my emergency fund. So not only is Cornell high cost, it's constantly finding ways to take money from its students. So that needs to be fixed.
EVP
I want to echo everything that everyone's been saying, especially with what VP Young said about marginalized groups and marginalized communities. Also, what Representative Chaudhuri said in regards to kind of like mental health, I really think that the university should be doing a better job in allowing like when there are really, really hard times on campus. There was about three student deaths and even more with some faculty deaths this past fall. And like I understand that like we have a schedule and we have the amount of like days that we need to have classes, but that can really take a toll on a lot of students' mental health. And those types of deaths, like unfortunately here at Cornell, are more common than they are at other universities. But allowing students to really be able to, if it's like just have a day to kind of deal with the fact that there's people in their communities that they once saw and they're never going to see again. Like that is something that is really, really hard to deal with. And then also potentially maybe putting more effort into like allowing students to be able to kind of celebrate their lives or like have vigils and that type of thing. I was talking to a friend at another university, and one of their someone in their class passed away, and actually their entire university is going to do a funeral. And I think that is something that we really should kind of look at, and whether it's about one individual or it's about a group of students that might have passed within that year or that semester, let's not forget the people that were students here.
Yep. Okay.
I would like to speak and echo a lot of what has been said, of course. I think that I've noticed a lot of general trends in lack of community trust on this campus. And I do think that is a top-down issue. When it comes to shared governance, I mean, I have worked for going on 2 years for at least 15 hours of every week in this job, and I feel like no one would be able to tell that because every single administrator I approached, the answer is always a no, or it's a vague response, or it's one that kind of demonstrates that they do not really care about this organization. And if this is the if the student assembly and the shared governance structure of the assemblies is the closest thing to high level input that students have at scale, and that there's no trust in that organization on the student side because there is no trust in that organization, or no accountability in that organization on the student side because there's no trust in that organization or respect from the administrative side, then that definitely corrupts the administrative and student relationship. There's also just in general within the student body a lot of, again, lack of community trust. There are so many people I talk to, and they're like, "Well, I would never leave my laptop unattended in a library on this campus, even if I'm going within eyesight, or if I, no one here holds the door open for me. No one says thank you. There's no small talk. There's no eye contact." And I do think that that is not as problematic on other campuses, even really massive campuses. I'm friends with members of student government of Texas A&M University, 64 plus thousand people on that campus. They don't have the same complaints, and there's, it's four times as big. So I think that there's a lot that can be done, especially with a long range plan in mind to improve student interconnection and student the just trust within this community as a whole. I think a big my magic wand question was that I would renovate Willard Straight and RPCC to make student third spaces more inviting and modern and relevant to the student experience. So that's my answer in the rotation. Who else? Blackguards up. Okay, Representative Carson.
Yeah, thank you again for taking the time to speak with us today. A lot of similar things that I think have already brought up, but definitely, soft skills is like a big thing here. I think it might be partially because I don't know, there's a lot of classes that are very big, and it's just kind of like you interact with your TAs a fair amount, but you don't really get to see your professors on a larger scale. So you're kind of, I don't know, you just don't like get the as much guidance and mentorship unless you like I think put in a fair amount of effort, which is good, but I think it should be a little more accessible for everyone that they have more of a closer relationship with their professors just by nature of being in a class with them. I think also like with SDS accommodations, I think like similar things with like religious accommodations, like I think there's a lack of enforcement of like or the enforcement varies by professor, and I think it should be a little more like if you have an accommodation, it should be honored by all professors across the board. And I guess one other thing I would say is as far as like transparency over its relations and relations with the federal government, I think the administration could do a little better job of being a lot more transparent with the student body. I mean, I get we get information and about this from the Daily Sun and stuff like that, but I think the administration itself could also be more direct with students about what's going on.
Representative Sekic is on Zoom, so I'll recognize him next, then continue. If he's so, Odd Mayor.
Sorry for that. Thank you all for speaking. I definitely agree with almost everything that people have said right now. I think the first and most important thing I'd like to start off with is that the code of conduct and expressive activity policy is a really, really massive damper, I think, on the student culture and campus culture. I mean, I think almost a lot of the things that students treasure on campus, such as the Alana Byline Org, Zephyr Khanna Center, the Latina Living Center, and a lot of these other institutions on campus, were achieved through student peaceful protest, as that's the kind of bargaining lever and method that students have and have had for a really long time. And under the current student code of conduct and under the current expressive activity policy, it's really almost impossible for students to kind of express themselves in any mass movement on campus without having their enrollment at risk and threatened. And I think it's kind of ridiculous that if students want to protest, it has to be between 12 to 1, which is lunchtime for everyone. And you can't have any sort of signs or placards, or there's so many rules in the expressive activity policy that are just there so that if they wanted to enforce them, they could suspend students for it. And then on OSCCS, the student code of conduct is purposefully vaguely written, and the procedures created in it are purposefully done so that they can kind of set up and influence the decision in the way they conduct the trials for each student. And I think that's really, really horrible because it both leads to students not being able to, they're more likely to be found guilty than not in a lot of cases because the standard of evidence is really, really low. And then on top of that, I mean, organizations, it's ridiculous that if someone files, if I right now wrote a sentence on the Cornell hazing website about that, how if student assembly made me do something, the most likely result is that student assembly would be put on temporary suspension the day after. That has shut down so many clubs on campus because someone, can write something, and then if they make it sound vaguely accurate, OSCCS just puts everyone on a temporary suspension for 2 to 3 weeks until they quote unquote, investigate something. And that's just killing and dampening campus culture at a time where we kind of don't really have one. I think also President Kotlikoff needs to respond to the referendum on this specifically. We had a referendum that has had, I think, the second highest turnout on record, and it was over 93% in favor. I think it's ridiculous to ignore student voices like that, especially when he's advocating for especially when he's advocating for peaceful protests and students expressing their voice. Not through this protests on campus. And when we do it the peaceful way through the referendum, it's been almost 3 or 4 months and there's nothing yet. I think that's extremely ridiculous. And then, I would also kind of just finish on the fact that, like everyone said, the future of the American university has to rely on social skills and kind of, creating, go back. I think we need to go back to the kind of liberal arts school model and work on kind of creating an ex a campus experience where you learn both academically and grow as a person over the course of 4 years. I think the way it is right now, I think a lot of students are barely doing either because there's no kind of, I mean, we've talked about it, but there's no kind of unifying campus culture besides like slope day and then, going out on homecoming and St. Patty's Day. I don't think I can really name, I don't think anyone at Cornell can really name anything that is a universal like tradition or event in the that has occurred over the past few years. Dragon Day is a Friday before spring break. And to be quite honest, and I've spoken to a few architecture students about it, the architecture department is now so obsessed on academics that they don't give them as much budget or time to build the dragon, and so it ends up like not looking the best, and it's pretty boring, and no, there are less people attending every year. The Phoenix is barely a thing at all anymore because engineers now don't put any time or effort into it, and so I think the university needs to kind of, revitalize and reinvigorate Cornell campus traditions, and kind of, redefine what it means to be a Cornell student. Sure, it means any person in any study. But like I said, there used to be, campus-wide traditions and events and things that people would do that would unify people across all of the colleges. I don't think anything like that exists on today's campus. And I think that's something that should be done and kind of changed. And then lastly, I think a few other people have said it before, the Cornell really needs to reevaluate its administrator talent strategy. And it's a problem that's been facing all of the Ivy Leagues. The number of administrators per student is ridiculous, and it drives up student costs to attend here. And on top of it, when to be quite honest, and I'm sure a lot of students here feel the same way, when you interact with some of them, it's ridiculous the way they treat students, considering you're either here on financial aid or you fully pay, that they can't help you, they ignore you, they treat you horribly. And quite honestly, a lot of them are not the brightest. And it's like it feels like you're talking to a wall, a brick wall sometimes. And so for the number of administrators here, It does not correlate to the number of things that get done at the school. The policy, the talent strategy really needs to be reevaluated on that. And I think that's just about everything I have to say. Thank you all.
Thank you.
Recognize one more person because we are at time. Recognize Representative Massoud because she was first of the second round.
Okay. I want to start by just echoing absolutely everything in Mir Representative Sekic just said. I think that the way that the expressive activity policy works and the way that the student code of conduct work here show that Cornell does a really, really good job of keeping us all quiet. They're not, I cannot, I'm a public policy major, and I could not go home and tell people that like we have discussions about current events on a frequent basis and that I'm constantly engaged in critical dialogue and I'm you know like discussing things with my peers. That just doesn't happen. It's not happening enough in the classroom space, and it's not happening enough on the outside space because students are being repressed to such an egregious extent. I think on top of that, I want to talk about the religious accommodations things as well. It's a very, very weird like basis that they do this on. I don't know. There needs to be a better standard for how religious accommodations are looked at through like every avenue. I was going to bring up housing as an example because, for instance, I live in Balch Hall, which is the all women's residence, and I live there through, I lived there my freshman year through in a religious accommodation. But I know several girls who were unable to do that for some reason and got stuck in co-ed housing when that was like very, very uncomfortable for them and very uncomfortable for their parents because of the religion that they were raised in. And then on the topic of mental health, I think that we have, like, we know our school's reputation around mental health, and the way that it's constantly swept under the rug is just contributing to how bad it is. This past year, we've had multiple student deaths. For instance, I had a classmate pass away, and I heard about his death through an email from my professors just telling us that we didn't have class the next day, because I'm sure you've all heard your classmate passed away. I had not heard that my classmate passed away. I think that there needs to be more communication to students when tragic events like that happen. And there also just needs to be more collective mourning in the university because it's like it happens and then everybody forgets about it the next day and it's crazy. And it happens so often here, and the fact that we're not addressing it is making it so much worse. And then I also wanted to mention something that Representative Causey brought up to me while we were in our breakout group. She mentioned that there should kind of be more transparency for freshmen, especially about like good student orgs or communities that they can join if they have like a certain concern. Like there are especially like students who like don't necessarily have the same family support that we all do, like students who have grown up in foster care, students who have, you know, like are have a parent who's passed, things like that. Like there's there needs to be more community spaces made for those students and advertised for them as they come into school based on, you know, like their demographic information that we all put in when we apply. Yeah, that's all I have to say.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you all for your participation. If you can slowly hand back papers to the ends of the table, and same for community members. We are at time and pens. And I'm going to be seating the chair for the remainder of the meeting as I have to break my fast and take a prelim.
Oh, we wouldn't have any pass. We're not pass. We wouldn't have any pass. Before we enter public comment, the chair would smile favorably upon a motion to set public comments would end at 6:15, just to ensure that we hear and have enough time to hear from the audience, while also the number of resolutions that we have on our agenda. Is there? So I smile favorably upon that motion. Representative Early.
I'm actually not doing that motion. I'm moving to you know what motion I'm gonna do. We talked about this last week. I gave notice. Our previous resolution, Resolution 43, makes it difficult for certain student groups that benefit marginalized communities to have access to special projects funding. The majority of people who were here last week voted for it. Unfortunately, that wasn't enough because of weird procedural stuff, but this week we only need the majority of people here to vote for it. I move to rescind Resolution 43.
Is there any dissent? Okay, seeing there's dissent, we're going to vote.
We debated.
Correct. We're going to enter debate on this motion to rescind. Representative Ehrlich. Okay, seeing withdrawal of dissent. Is there any dissent to that motion? Okay, seeing none, we're not going to vote on the motion to rescind that resolution. So all. So we'll vote on it. We still have to vote on it because there has to be a majority. So all those in favor of rescinding that resolution, please raise your placards. All those opposed?
I am opposed. I don't know if you can see my hand on Zoom.
All right, thank you. Any abstentions? And a vote from our 11 yeses, 13 noes, and 3 abstentions. That
I call for a division.
what's your division of the question?
Not dividing the question, division. So, like, division of the house. Maybe Zora can help real quick with that before.
I don't know. We have to all vote in a way that is now public, basically, so that everyone knows how we all vote.
That's a different.
It's different, but it would have the same effect. It's not a roll call vote. But we will.
Okay, back and forth out of order. We're looking into doing that. Just give a sec.
Don't know exactly how it works. I just read it about it's still like 15 minutes ago.
Point of inquiry.
That is a division is only possible for a rising vote, and since the vote has been taken,
No,
it
it's
should
for a
not be
hand
called.
raise or verbal vote. It's in there. I read it like
It's
15 minutes
only
ago.
for a rising vote, though. So it's only if a vote has not yet been taken and isn't like about to be taken.
No, it says that it's after the chair
It says it's
announces.
only for unclear votes.
No, it says if it's after the chair, if
Okay.
it would have been unclear after the chair announces the numbers, we can. It's in there.
It's close. You can define it as close.
We're going to read the articles about this.
Just as far as I know, also, I think a motion to rescind can also be only done once per session and the student assembly for a specific subject matter. And the student assembly session is the year long. So I don't know if this can be revoted on a third time.
I'll read Article Rules 4, 450. Verifying an inconclusive vote. A voice vote, or in large meetings, even a vote by show of hands, may sometimes be inconclusive, either because the vote is close or because a significant number of members have failed to vote. If the chair feels that the members may question a somewhat close result of which he is reasonably convinced, he can first say the ayes or the noes seem to have it. The chair then pauses, and any member who doubts the result is thus invited to demand verification of the vote by a division, as explained below. If no member makes such a demand or states that he doubts the result, the chair continues, the ayes have it, as shown above. There
I
was.
mean, I can't. I'm sorry, I didn't hear all of that because Ishan was saying stuff in my ear. So,
Vice President Young.
but you said in the beginning that if it was a close vote, that would also count as justification enough to do it. And it was a close vote, so that would make it justified.
It says it says a voice vote, or in large meetings, a vote by show of hands may sometimes be inconclusive, either because the vote is close or because a significant number of members have failed to vote.
So is the vote not close?
That the chair did not indicate in his speech any inconclusivity. He did not say it seems to be. He
Wait, but there were people who
counted the
didn't
vote and
vote.
stated the vote.
There were people who didn't vote.
Given the yeses were 11 and the noes were 13, as well as that being close with the number of two votes, as well as there was multiple members that were not present in the room, I will accept in terms of the division because that is close. There are potential votes that could allow that.
Continuing on, if the chair is in actual doubt of in the case of such a vote, however, he does not announce a result, but instead immediately retakes the vote, strictly speaking, always a rising vote. Regarding the use of show of hands as a method of verifying an inconclusive voice vote, however, see below. If it appears when those in the affirmative rise that the vote will be close enough to require a count, the chair should count the vote or direct the secretary to do so, or appoint a convenient number of tellers, preferably an even number. If after a vote has been retaken as an uncounted rising vote, the chair finds himself still unable to determine the result, he must take the vote a third time as a counted rising vote. What was taken initially was a counted rising vote.
Given my previous statement, we're going to redo the vote because of what I said. So, and we're going to do it immediately. So all those in favor of rescinding the resolution, please raise your placards.
Yeah. Point of inquiry, wouldn't that make this a roll call vote?
Yeah, can I just move for a roll call vote then?
No, because you move for the division.
The division is essentially
double right.
That's the way to make it the most clear. Have it on record about how the vote has ever been
sold. It's not a rising.
I'm seeing you now with the engineer.
Yeah, it's fine. Okay.
No, it's not. It says right here, a member can demand it until the vote has been announced.
Okay. What are you doing?
Point of order.
Recognize.
Because a division can only be called between the time of negative votes being cast and the result being announced, I disagree with the chair's call because he did announce the results before the call for division was made, which would then invalidate it.
Point of order.
No, wait. Point of order. It says in
out of order. Recognize.
Point of orders don't have to be recognized, but she went first.
So the only way to be able to determine that it was a close vote is by announcing the vote, therefore allowing a member to then call for a point of division.
Would you like to, you for clarification, you could rescind your division and that could be something different.
To do a roll call vote?
No, because we've already voted on it. So,
well, I'm just saying that the rules, my point of order is that the rules say after the chair announces that the ayes have it or the nays have it, that you can call for a division. So you don't have to wait. You don't have to do it before the result is announced. President Durham is wrong about that as far
division,
as I understand.
Division is when it's unclear, but they have.
I'm saying it was unclear because there were people who didn't vote.
Okay.
The difference was two
out,
votes. So
this is out of order. What we're going to do, I'm going to revote one more time. Because that is what I said. We're going to revote because there was members that left and it was could be considered close because those members that were out could possibly have, I don't know, swayed. We don't know. So we're going to revote.
Point of inquiry.
Recognize.
Isn't the only way to have a very clear vote is to do a roll call vote? Because what happens if one does not raise their
would
blicker?
You like to?
Yeah, I would motion for this to be a roll call vote.
Is there a second? Okay. Seeing that.
Is this a send?
We're going to do it's privilege. So we're going to do a roll call vote for the rescinding of the resolution.
Thank you.
Wait, point of inquiry.
Point of order. I think the motion to roll call vote has to be.
There's already representatives speaking on the floor.
Sorry, I can't hear over on this.
No worries. So point of inquiry, like. Can someone summarize what happened in Resolution 43?
Wait, repeat your question.
Can someone summarize what happened in Resolution 43?
What happened? Okay, the resolution 43 was passed, I think, about 2 weeks ago now at this point. And now Representative Ehrlich is asking, or he made an announcement last meeting, and he said that he was going to rescind that resolution because of issues with how it's going to impact other student organizations. And so now we're doing it again with this meeting. And then we also just had a desire for, we're doing a revote based on what I said previously, and we're doing a roll call vote now as well. So
point of order, Roll call, the roll call vote has to be motioned. When you're motioning for something to be voted on, you have to include that it's being voted on by roll call in the original motion. Given that this is a recount, it cannot be done by
roll
call.
Point of order, you made an announcement saying we're doing roll call vote. We're supposed to start voting right away, and you're not supposed to hear anything else.
Actually, once again, point of order. A point of order is interruptive and is allowed to interfere with business.
Please, we're going to continue with the roll call vote. It is allowed. We just run over everything about it being allowed.
You can move to appeal that.
Please proceed with the roll call vote on rescinding the previous resolution.
Daniel Adequate?
Yes.
Amira Aftab? Sonia Agarwal?
Yes.
Jay Anand?
No.
Lydia Bloom?
No.
Dylan Carson?
Yay.
Maishe Kazi?
Yay.
Amir Sekid?
Point of order, I think the chair should cede chairship because they've already expressed their opinion on this before.
Representative Sheckett, we're in the middle of voting already, so...
Yeah, I can raise the point of order to be recognized.
You cannot raise that point of order because we're in the middle of voting.
If the rule has been broken, it takes priority. I think the chair is being biased on this issue because you've already expressed your opinion on it.
Representative
in previous meetings.
I do not hear a point of order at all right now. No information or question. But two, we are in the middle of voting. Please continue. Please continue.
Nay.
Holton Cook. Sora Duram.
No.
Grace Dorward. Max Ehrlich.
Yay.
Armin Fard.
Hey. Do not say another thing.
Christian Flournoy.
Chair goes last.
Sorry. Ezra Galbraith.
Yay.
Isabella Gale.
Yay.
Lawrence Hahn. Vansh Kakra.
Yeah.
Sion Kim. Catherine Kristopa. Yasmin Masood.
Yay.
Jeffrey Moy. Ellie Porter. John Purcell.
Yay.
Hayden Spector. Jocelyn Swabi. Christian Tarla.
Yay.
Thor Wagsback.
Yay.
Alexander Walters.
Yeah.
Hayden Watkins.
Nay.
Zachary Abu.
Nay.
Eric Yao.
Nay.
Kennedy Young.
Nay.
Christian Flournoy.
Yay.
Christian Tarala was nay, and Christian Flournoy is yay.
Wait, say that again?
Tarala wanted to be nay.
Tarala is nay. Flournoy is yay. I think you repeated my name twice on accident.
16 voted yes, 14 for no, and 1 abstained.
Can you please repeat?
16 voted yes, 14 voted no, and 1 abstained.
With that, the previous resolution has been rescinded. We are now moving to public comment. The chair is offered to be upon extending to 6:30 for public comment. Any second? Would small, yeah, extending to 6:30. Is there a second? Is there any dissent? Seeing none, public comment has been extended to 6:30. The chair now will recognize any community member who wishes to speak at this time. Each community member may speak once for up to 3 minutes. I'll gavel at one gavel at 1 minute, two gavel at 30 seconds, three at 10 seconds. You may proceed.
All right, what's up? I'm Franklin. I'm probably not going to be talking about what they're going to be talking about behind me. I'm back, you know, Res 36. You probably not even going to get to it, but love Ishan. Love all, a lot of ideas. This one, not so much. Special projects funding. I just want to say there's five on the agenda today. How special can they be if there's five? Maybe they're all really special, but I doubt it. I'm just, you know, back about the leaky faucet that is the reserve special projects funds. Be careful with it. Think big, you know, to quote Sinners, no vision. You know what I mean? Think larger. Think what you can do with the money for the next generation. All right. Good luck with that.
Bye, guys.
All right. Good evening, members of the Student Assembly. My name is David Geckman, a former member of this assembly. I was representing the IOR school. During my time here, I worked on practical initiatives like expanding access to Narcan and testing kits in campus housing and improving access to health products across campus. I mention that briefly because the Student Assembly is at its best when it focuses on tangible improvements to undergrad student life. Tonight, I want to urge members to vote no on Resolution 55 and no on Resolution 61. Starting with Resolution 61, this resolution asks the undergraduate student assembly to weigh in on Cornell's institutional partnership with the Technion. Regardless of anyone's personal view on that partnership, this is simply not within the purview of the undergrad student assembly. The partnership involves graduate programs, research collaboration, and broader university institutional relationship. Discussions of that nature involve the administration, trustees, and graduate governance bodies. The undergraduate student assembly exists to represent undergraduate students and legislate on matters affecting undergraduate life. When this body begins weighing in on institutional partnerships and graduate level issues, it moves outside its mandate and weakens its ability to advocate effectively for undergraduates. Then there's Resolution 55. Resolution 55 moves the assembly into another area that should give members serious pause. Positioning this body as a judge of global political conflicts and the legitimacy of speakers invited to campus. The issue here is not only the specific case addressed in this resolution, it is the precedent it establishes. Members of the assembly often speak about the importance of peaceful protest and encouraging political discussion on campus. Universities are meant to be spaces where difficult and controversial ideas are debated openly. Students should be able to challenge speakers, question them, protest them, and engage with them. But Resolution 55 moves in the opposite direction. Instead of encouraging debate, it begins establishing political standards for who should be allowed to speak or participate in that dialogue. Once that precedent is set, it opens a slippery and dangerous slope. Today it may apply to one issue, tomorrow it may apply to another. Eventually, it risks turning this assembly into a body that attempts to adjudicate international conflicts rather than focusing on undergraduate governance. Cornell has historically upheld principles of academic freedom and open inquiry. Universities should be a place where controversial ideas are debated and scrutinized, not places where student legislators attempt to regulate speech through political resolutions. There's also broader questions about priorities. Members of this assembly often talk about campus culture. Culture is shaped by the choices this body makes. The Student Assembly controls significant funding and has ability to invest in programs, services, and initiatives that materially improve student life. Students right now are facing housing pressures, mental health challenges, financial stress, and safety concerns. Addressing those issues requires time, energy, sustained effort. Every minute spent on symbolic geopolitical resolutions is time not spent addressing the everyday issues affecting Cornell students. Members were elected to represent undergraduate interests, not to act as a foreign policy body or intervene in the graduate level institutional matters. For those reasons, I strongly urge this assembly to vote no on Resolution 55 and no on Resolution 61.
That is fine. Thank you.
There's someone in the waiting room on the Zoom. Sorry to interrupt. Can they be let in?
Yes, they will be let in. You may go ahead.
Good afternoon. Sorry, I'm deaf, so I can't hear myself. It's a little awkward. Okay. Good afternoon. My name is Hannah DeFelice, and I am a PhD student in the Department of Ecology and Evolutionary Biology. I am here today to ask you to please refrain from voting on Resolution 61 regarding the partnership between Technicon and Cornell Tech. To be clear, I am not here for or against this resolution in the content. I simply don't believe that the undergraduate student assembly is the correct place to be having this conversation. Cornell Tech is an interdisciplinary technical campus in New York City. It has multiple graduate level academic programs in law, engineering, and design, but it does not currently have any undergraduate degree programs or students. Cornell Tech has its own student government, and its students are part of the graduate student organizations across campuses. The role of the undergraduate student assembly is to advocate for the needs of the Cornell undergraduate students. And I really do, honestly, appreciate all the work you do on that issue. But this resolution isn't about undergraduate issues. Any changes in the partnership and funding that happen between Cornell Tech and Technicon would overwhelmingly impact graduate students at a time when graduate student funding is already complicated and just really difficult. And it would not have ramifications on the undergraduate population, particularly on the Ithaca campus. If the relationship between Cornell Tech and Technicon is a problem, the correct place to advocate around that is the graduate student assembly and the Cornell Tech graduate, their student government. Again, I'm not speaking for or against the content on this issue. The people most impacted are just not here. They're not members of this voting body. They're not here to speak to you. So I just wanted to that's really what I'm advocating for, is just tabling the issue. So in the spirit of fairness, democracy, representation, I'm just urging you to not vote on this issue and instead allow the graduate student organizations to take it up. Thank you so much for your time and for allowing me to speak to you today.
Hi, my name is Sam, and I'm a sophomore here at Cornell. I'm speaking tonight to urge you to refrain from continuing to consider Resolution 61. The Student Assembly exists to represent and serve Cornell's undergraduate students. That is its mandate, that is its constituency. And yet tonight, we are spending time debating a resolution about a graduate program. Meanwhile, there's a backlog of resolutions that we just discussed for over 30, 40 minutes, none relating to Technion or a graduate program. And so here we are, and there are real tangible problems that affect students' daily lives and deserve this assembly's full attention. Nevertheless, we are here debating something that will not improve undergraduate life in any meaningful way and may actually make it worse. I have to ask why. Why is this what the assembly has chosen to prioritize? At this point, it is not difficult to see what is happening. What began as a discussion and a healthy disagreement about Israel has turned into an obsession. An ongoing fixation on Israel that repeatedly resurfaces, regardless of whether the issue in question actually fixes any problems or is even within the jurisdictions of this body. The argument being made is that the academic research connected to institutions in Israel, leaders in technological innovation that offer Cornell students available research opportunities, is somehow uniquely problematic because it may have links to their government. But if that is the standard we're going to apply, it would implicate research institutions at universities across the world. Universities everywhere operate within national systems. Research at American universities receive federal funding and are frequently connected to US government and defense institutions. The same is true in Europe, Asia, and virtually everywhere else. Out of the 176 international collaborations, spanning 62 countries. I'm yet to hear of any resolutions against any other partner country except Israel. Why? This is not constructive governance. It is not good faith policymaking. And most importantly, it is not serving the students who elected you. If graduate students wish to debate this issue, there's a body that you can refer that to and refer it there. But this assembly has real undergraduate concerns that demand attention, housing, accessibility, student resources. Those are the issues that this body exists to address. I urge you to drop the consideration of Resolution 61 indefinitely and refocus on the issues of the students it was created to serve. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Ari. I'm a senior in the engineering department at Cornell, and I'm a firm believer in the importance of free speech, open dialogue, and open education. I would like to explain how Resolutions 55 and 61 are antithetical to these values and the values that our university should strive to uphold. Resolution 55 condemns inviting people to campus who have taken violent actions in positions of political power. This is in no way a means towards reducing violence on our campus, and in fact has the opposite effect. Person who has taken actions that international institutions deem to be war crimes, being on our campus does not lead to violent crimes being directly committed. A speaker does not come here to tell students to participate in violence. They come here to share their perspectives. Adopting ethical standards on who to invite to and who to invite to Cornell prevents speakers who simply have opinions and actions that we don't like. It is shutting down the opportunity for students and faculty to hear alternative perspectives and develop their own educated opinions on why they disagree. And this is precisely what leads to further conflict. We attend an institution that challenges us to engage with perspectives we don't agree with. Resolution 55 specifically cites Israeli Parliament member Tzipi Livni as someone who should not have been allowed to speak on campus. I attended the Pathways to Peace talk where she was featured, and I have strong feelings against many of the actions that Livni has taken in her government position, as well as opinions on the other two speakers of that day. Still, I sat there and I listened. I ask you, how could I be expected to have a thought-out opinion on the conflict in the Middle East without hearing those politicians' thoughts and their reasonings behind their actions? How could I engage in a dialogue with my peers about the issues facing our world without an understanding of the people who directly play a part in those issues? Any legitimate opinion must be able to withstand an honest attempt to prove it wrong, and as an elite university, Cornell should be a primary defender of that standard. Resolution 61 does students a huge disservice in a similar way through its Cornell Tech's partnership with the world-renowned technological education and research of the Technion. This partnership provides provides graduate students with educational resources, research opportunities, and networking with professors at the top of their field who have created world-shaping technologies. This is an amazing opportunity for students to have resources beyond what Cornell Tech alone can offer. I will not argue that the Technion has no part in weapons manufacturing. I will argue that eliminating this partnership based on a disagreement with some of the work they do is a great shame for students. Is a contradiction to the service that a university should provide to those that come there to learn and to gather the skills they need to impact the world. Please keep in mind our shared values of free speech and dialogue and our desire to give our students everything they can to change the world. I urge the assembly to vote against Resolution 55 and to table Resolution 61. Thank you.
Hello? Good volume.
Cool. You're good.
Good. All right. Good afternoon. My name is Levi Shmuel. I am here to speak to you regarding resolutions 55 and 61. These resolutions, while they may be well-intentioned, are not aligned with the goals and mission of this university or the student assembly. Resolution 55 condemns the invitation of so-called war criminals to campus. However, the resolution never mentions a different criterion or system for choosing speakers, nor does it mention other potential problematic speakers. Furthermore, if this resolution is so concerned about crimes against humanity and human rights, why does it ignore the massive influx of Qatari money into the school? Qatar practices modern day slavery, including debt bondage and passport revocations, while simultaneously funding Hamas. Surely this is a bigger moral concern than the actions of a man who hasn't been president of the United States for 25 years. I have trouble believing that this resolution is actually concerned with human rights or with correcting justice, but with silencing speakers with whom the author disagrees, especially given the main sponsor saw it fit to cite a ruling of a court in Yugoslavia, a country that does no longer exists, and which does not, and which was engaged in a genocide against Bosnians at the time. Resolution 61 is another attempt to sow discord and manufacture a moral dilemma based on the author's own opinions. Cornell Tech's partnership with the Technion is vital and beneficial to both institutions. Technion works to create water infrastructure and develop high tech, including medical innovations such as the PillCam. The partnership includes with Cornell Tech provides students invaluable networking and research opportunities. I implore you, a body tasked with benefiting Cornell student body, to reject 61. Do your part to preserve student opportunities and resources.
Hi, everyone. I'm Jamie, and I'm a freshman. Since the 1990s, the Israeli government has shifted increasingly to the far right, due in large part to unwavering support from the American right. This is why we have seen more violent attacks on Palestinian communities and a dangerous effort to steal and even annex Palestinian land. Unfortunately, Israeli liberals have not been the beneficiaries of that same love from the American left. A cornerstone of the Israeli left, much like here in America, is the university system. Leading Israeli magazine writer Ido Conrad called the university system, quote, the last bastion of progressive thought in Israel. Israeli universities are where left-leaning students organize anti-war efforts and spread anti-Netanyahu messaging. Israeli universities are where coexistence is not just a promise, but a reality. In fact, at Technion University, 1 in 5 students are Palestinian citizens of Israel. So while the American right cozies up to Netanyahu's extremist, ideologically driven base, American liberals are tragically hostile to their Israeli liberal counterparts. So to you, American college students, I say, if you really wish to see an end to ongoing violence in Gaza and an end to settler violence in the West Bank, you should actually seek to bolster relations with peace-seeking Israeli students and vote against Resolution 61. Because if you boycott Technion, you are not just boycotting Israeli liberals and Palestinian students, but you are chipping away at the main pillar on which Israeli liberal democracy stands. Benjamin Netanyahu is already eroding Israeli democracy. Please, please do not help him. Thank you.
So unlike some of the speakers before me who seem to believe that a student government is some kind of nebulous apolitical body or one that faces a dichotomy of whether it takes political stances or stands up for the student experience, I actually believe that you ran for these positions because you believed in the power of student voice on all topics and that every day, like today, is a chance to stand up for it. My name is Adriana Vink. I'm president of the Progressives at Cornell. I come here today with two propositions for you. Number one, our university should not prop up war crimes. Number two, our university should not be run as a dictatorship by the administration. There are two resolutions before you today that seek to achieve those ends, resolutions 55 and 61. Resolution 55 seeks to ensure that our university administration does not use its particular institutional platform to propagate the ideas and stances of war criminals. In 2025, the Office of the University President sponsored an event labeled, quote-unquote, Pathways to Peace, hosting Israeli war criminal Zippy Livni, who for many years was not able to step foot in European countries for fear of arrest by prosecutors. This includes canceling trips to the UK and Belgium after receiving summonses from local police. Resolution 61 asks the university to reevaluate its relationship with the Technion Israel Institute of Technology, whom it partners with at Cornell Tech in New York City. Technion has researched and developed weapons for the IDF and private defense companies, such as the D9 bulldozer, drones, smart bombs, surveillance technology, and more, all of which are tested on Palestinians, then deployed around the world. We've heard a lot about institutional neutrality in our time here at Cornell, though from our time here at Cornell, we must know it isn't true. The question is whether you believe the institution that you attend and fund should use its institutional power to prop up war crimes and war criminals, or to prioritize the student experience and its mission to do the greatest good. When Cornell's relationship with Technion was initiated, significant student and staff pushback was completely ignored, including a mandate from the Faculty Senate against the partnership. When Cornell invited war criminal Livni last year, pushback was not listened to, but rather punished. This leads me to my second proposition. The question of whether you believe the student body, as well as shared governance bodies like the Student and Faculty Senate, should have serious decision-making power, or if you're willing to cede that to the current dictatorial administration without even a fight. Other schools in Canada, the Netherlands, Australia, and more have cut their ties with Technion, so it is possible. In the past, Cornell students have successfully pushed our university and won to divest from Sudan, to create a university-wide code of conduct, to divest from fossil fuels, and even to create our current cultural studies departments. President Durham stated at the beginning of this meeting that we have a community trust problem at Cornell on this campus, stemming from issues with shared governance. And I am telling you, if you don't pass these resolutions, the student body will trust you even less, and there is a group of individuals willing to correct that.
Vice President Watkins.
I move to extend the meeting time to 7:30.
Is there a second? Any dissent? All right, seeing none.
Hello, my name is Sayuri Pfeiffer. I'm the president of Students for Justice in Palestine. I'm here to urge the assembly to vote yes for resolutions 55 and 61. Unlike some of the other speakers that have come before me, I think it's abundantly clear why this is within the purview of student assembly. As a student body, we have made it abundantly clear that we find the administration's continued support of a nation actively committing genocide to be morally reprehensible, not reflective of our values as a student body, and grossly out of line with Cornell's supposed mission to do the greatest good. These resolutions seek to terminate the incredibly disturbing institutional ties that Cornell continues to maintain with Israel, and it affects all of us. Last spring, President Kolakoff notoriously hosted Sidney Livni. Like the speaker before me said, she would not enter entire countries because they threatened to investigate her for war crime allegations. That's not someone who's like a scholar who's here to talk theoretically about her role in Israeli politics. This is someone who's actively been threatened with investigation for her involvement in war crimes. That is a completely different issue. And it is really important that we recognize that distinction and not obfuscate it by claiming, you know, institutional neutrality or the need for free speech. That is the university's highest office actively platforming someone who has been involved notoriously and publicly with acts of civilian murder. So I think it's really important to clarify that point and clarify why it's really critical that you guys vote yes for Resolution 55. Additionally, I think it's important to recognize that this event and the need for this resolution is part of a larger pattern of insidious relationships that Cornell has cultivated with Israel. The Technion partnership with Cornell Tech involves us all because Cornell Tech is a satellite campus of the Cornell University. We're not completely separate institutions. We're not completely separate campuses. There are members of Cornell Tech's council that sit on the board of trustees that affects us at this university. I can't imagine that the funding tracks are completely separate. I think it would be a gross mischaracterization and a deliberate ignorance on our part to pretend that we can be completely separate from an institution that has our name, has people that sit on their board who also sit on the board that make decisions for us, who are actively collaborating with a university in Israel that has notoriously created and tested weapons of war on innocent civilians in Palestine. So I think it's really important that you uphold your responsibility to hold the university accountable and stand with the student body and vote yes for Resolution 55 and Resolution 61. Thank you.
Hello to the chair, hello to the board. My name is Mateo Felipe Barrera. I am a senior in urban planning. I am here to ask y'all to vote yes for both Resolution 61 and 55, because now it's not so much a question of is it in our purview. I would say I would advocate it's a question of what is right, whether it is in our purview or not. If we don't speak, who will? Like the grad students, I don't know if they're going to talk. because they're probably in Israeli pockets. Let's be real. Like, come on now. Like, the thing is, like, what we should be honest with ourselves as to what our university is doing. Like, if we say we're doing the greatest good and then do not do the greatest good, that's a clash, right? We should at least, like, either say what we're doing or don't say what we're doing, you know? Like, we don't deceive, just be honest, right? That I think that's a kind of pretty clear idea that we want to be honest and we want to know that our university is doing the greatest good or is not doing the greatest good and is fully like, yeah, we're not going to do the greatest good. That's not our purpose, right? Like, what is the purpose of the institution? Is it to educate run undergraduates? Is it to un educate, or is it just a financial means? Like, is it just a hedge fund? I don't know. Now, the people before me had talked about like as to why to vote no. I would encourage y'all to remember that Cornell has a history of extreme regressive thought. One of our presidents in the 80s, Rhodes, did not divest from apartheid, right? Like, our university gives people of power and appoints people to higher positions that are very regressive and have even, I think we can all agree apartheid is really bad. And if Rhodes in that time didn't want to divest, like maybe in 20 years we'll see the same thing with Kolokov, right? Why, you know? And they say that they talk about how like we shouldn't invite these people, or I think we shouldn't invite people who have committed war crimes to our campus because, yeah, I'm sure maybe they won't incite violence, but they condone it. You know, the Nazis took notes from American Jim Crow laws, and they used it, right? They perfected a lot of the stuff that was done in the South, and they turned it against Jewish people. Like, people take notes. Anyway, thank you.
Hello, everyone. My name is Smitra Pandit. I'm a recent graduate of Cornell's ILR school, and I'm also one of the former presidents of Students for Justice in Palestine at Cornell. I'm here to state my support for Resolution 61, calling for the termination of Cornell University's partnership with Technion. And I also want to express my support for Resolution 55, condemning the university administration's use of programming to platform individuals implicated in war crimes. As someone who was in attendance for most of the event, the level of biased information that was being presented by these panelists at an event sponsored by the university's administration was truly astounding and honestly disturbing. And I think we've talked a lot about like the word war crimes, the word war criminal, this person, Sipi Livni, who is a war criminal. But during my time in E Board of Students for Justice in Palestine, we penned an opinion piece prior to this event that detailed some of the specific, I guess, things that Tzipi Livni did that are part of why she's considered a war criminal. So I wanted to, before I leave, read an excerpt from that piece. Tzipi Livni, then Israel's foreign minister and member of the war cabinet, openly embraced the operation's brutality. And this operation was Operation Cast Lead, which was an offensive that killed approximately 1,400 Palestinians, including around 300 children and hundreds of unarmed civilians, as reckless bombings devastated densely populated areas. When she was embracing the operation's brutality, she said, I quote, "Israel demonstrated real hooliganism during the course of the recent operation, which I demanded." She stated this a day after the operation ended. She was forced to cancel an appearance in Great Britain after a British court issued an arrest warrant for war crimes committed in Gaza in association with Operation Cast Lead. A 2009 article in The Guardian about the incident, a representative from her office described her as proud of all of her decisions regarding Operation Cast Lead. A week into this operation, Livni rejected a French proposal for a 48-hour truce, which would have allowed humanitarian aid into Gaza. She dismissed this French proposal for a 48-hour truce for humanitarian aid to feed children and feed starving civilians by claiming there's no humanitarian crisis in the Gaza Strip, and therefore there's no need for a humanitarian truce. Thank you for your time, and please vote in support of this resolution.
Representative Siduri.
Then.
Is there a second? Okay, is there any dissent? Okay, there's dissent. Seeing dissent, we're going to vote on that motion.
What
All
was the
those.
motion?
Then, comment, 64, 20 resolutions today.
We're going to vote because there's dissent. So all those in favor of, repeat, was it 640 or 645? Okay, all those in favor of extending public comment to 640, please raise your placards.
I am in favor.
Point of inquiry.
All those opposed.
Point of inquiry.
Yes.
How long do we have this room for?
7:30. All those opposed, please raise your placards. Any abstentions? That motion passes. So public comment has been extended to 6:40. Go ahead. You can continue.
Hi, my name is Francis Burns, and I am here to voice my strong support for resolutions 55 and 61. Universities are not merely marketplaces of ideas. They are institutions with legal, ethical, and moral obligations that exist alongside and constrain that mission. One of these obligations is the respect of international human rights law, including the Geneva Convention and the Rome Statute of the International Criminal Court, frameworks that the global community has built over decades precisely because some conduct is truly indefensible, irrespective of borders. When this university extends an official invitation to an individual credibly implicated in war crimes, it is not engaging in open inquiry. It is granting legitimacy to these criminals. It signals to students, faculty, staff, and the broader public that Cornell's immense institutional prestige is freely available to those who have overseen the targeting of civilians, the deliberate destruction of hospitals, schools, and the destruction of residential neighborhoods. Those who have overseen illegal invasions and land theft, those who have overseen the administration of a brutal system of apartheid. It causes particular harm to members of our communities who come from the regions affected by these atrocities or who belong to communities targeted by the individuals in question. It destroys relationships of trust and respect between administrators and students, relationships that are crucial to maintaining a healthy climate of free expression and debate. This is not a call to restrict speech or to avoid controversial figures. Students, student groups, and faculty retain the right to invite, host, and engage with a wide range of speakers, and they do. This resolution addresses a narrow and more serious question: whether the university itself, with its name, its funds, and its institutional prestige, should be lending its endorsement to individuals facing credible accusations of war crimes. The answer must be no. Hannah Arendt, the Holocaust scholar, said, "The death of human empathy is one of the earliest and most telling signs of a culture about to fall into barbarism. Let us not fall into barbarism." Regarding Resolution 61, I will say this. Technion did not pay for any part of the development or the construction because of laws preventing it from doing so, foreign military financing laws. The fact that Cornell allows Technion to effectively continue their presence on the island for free and pays their staff is pandering to the Israeli military. Our tuition dollars, tax dollars, and several large donations to Cornell have been spent babysitting and subsidizing an Israeli university's existence on American soil. That money could have been spent addressing the kind of quality of life issues that several speakers before me have mentioned, which is why this resolution is relevant to this assembly. The student assembly has an obligation to address this mismanagement of funds and seemingly pointless donation of prestige, land, and money intended for our students to a dubiously legal military research outpost of the Israeli government. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Noah Farb, and I'm a sophomore. I'm urging you all to vote no on Resolution 61 and 55. First, for Resolution 61, the student government should not be in the position to decide which universities Cornell can speak to or relate to. That's a matter that, first, the Technion Institute is not even, Cornell Tech is not even an undergraduate student organization. And so putting, you know, the student, undergraduate student assembly in the position to delegate over this and legislate over it, I think just isn't strategic or beneficial to really anyone. Second, this resolution is purposely vague. It calls for terminating the Technion partnership while preserving Cornell Tech as an independent campus. But Cornell Tech has been built with this partnership. This resolution offers no explanation of how the separation would actually be done and what the steps would actually be done to take to, actually create any legitimate divide other than just in name only. Third, the resolution makes sweeping legal assertions that the Technion has violated International Court of Justice rulings, that Cornell is materially complicit in the weapons development. These are deeply contested. I would urge anyone to provide proof of any of these things, or really just a definition of war crimes that all criminal justice experts can agree on. I don't think that there's, like, it's a very disputed thing, and anyone, there's opinions on both sides, but it would be hard to find one that it's the clear and unanimous decision. This assembly is not a court of international law. As much as I respect all of you guys, none of us here are, international justices. We don't have law degrees. We're all undergraduates. And so I don't think that there should be passing resolutions based on definitions that aren't secure and set. Fourth, this sets a precedent that I don't think can be applied fairly. If the student assembly starts calling on Cornell to sever relationships based on a government's actions, we have to answer which conflicts count, which institutions get singled out, and who decides and determines these definitions and rulings. This is an impossible standard applied to a moving target. Would this assembly pass a similar resolution relating to Qatar's medical campus or Cornell's medical campus in Qatar? I'm not saying whether that should be good or not. I'm not adjudicating on that. But if this partnership with the Technion is not allowed, how is the one with Qatar also? Fifth, Cornell, as I mentioned earlier, is not an undergraduate institution. An undergraduate student assembly shouldn't overstep its reach and try to legislate over a campus while part of the Cornell umbrella, plays no real role in the day-to-day student life on Ithaca's campus. A conversation about transparent ethical review processes may be generally worth it, but this resolution is not that. Thank you.
Arise on a point of order.
Recognized.
I would ask that the chair encourage the crowd to respect all speakers. Everyone has their chance to speak. And if you're really about free speech, you're not going to interrupt the other speakers. Thank you.
That is echoed. Also, his time was adjusted to make sure that that didn't, like, he still had the amount of time that he was dealt with. So I made sure to make that correction. But you may continue.
Hello, my name is Veronica Ma. I'm a sophomore in the Arts and Sciences School. I'm here to speak in support of Resolution 55 and Resolution 61. I'll be speaking on Resolution 61 specifically, terminating the university's partnership with the Technion University in Israel. According to the ECCP, the European Coordination of Committees and Associations for Palestine, quote, Technion University has become virtually the R&D wing of the Israeli military, unquote. So what does this look like? For one, the university has held a long-standing research partnership with Elbit Systems. Elbit System is the largest Israeli military manufacturer. They provide 85% of the IDF's land-based equipment and 85% of drones by the Israeli Air Force. They also control the surveillance systems for the Israeli West Bank barrier. They've developed the Hermes drone, the same drone that has killed 2,310 Palestinians in 2014. Next, Technion has also created technologies that have specifically targeted innocent civilian populations. They have developed Scream, an acoustic system that, quote, creates sound levels that are unbearable to humans at distances up to 100 meters. You might ask, why would you use this device? The Israeli state has used Scream to suppress peaceful protests in Palestine. The technologies that Technion has helped create are utterly inhumane, and I do not think Cornell should play any part in the continued occupation of Palestinian land and the genocide in Palestine. I do not believe that Cornell should continue a partnership with a university that has directly attributed to the oppression and murder of innocent people. While Cornell Tech only enrolls grad students, its partnership with Technion affects every member of this community. It's a satellite campus under the Cornell name. As previous speakers have said, it's naive to think funds are not shared between the Ithaca campus and Cornell Tech. My tuition could and probably is being used to run Cornell Tech and sustain its relationship with Technion. As undergraduate students, we should get to vote on how our money is used and spent by the university. The push buttons for handicapped students remain broken on our university. Disabled students cannot enter buildings, and yet we spend millions on our partnership with Technion. Let's use that money to support students' mental health, increase accessibility for religious and disabled students, and increase financial aid for our community. Thank you so much.
My name is Hisham Khan. I'm a senior, and I want to urge this assembly to vote in favor of Resolution 55 and 61. There are four resolutions today speaking just about budget. There's one talking about the TCAT, one about free laundry. But this assembly's priorities are once again in defending our partnership with Israel Technion. Why? I was here last semester, urging you to support resolutions to call off Cornell's partnership with ICE. Quick with it. This assembly was quick to pass that resolution. But when it comes to the human rights for the Palestinian people, there seems to be controversy again and again. Elbit Systems was mentioned to be researched at Israel Tech. Now, fun fact, Elbit Systems tests their weapons on Kashmir, the region that I'm from. So why duck around the corner? If you want to support Israel Tech and if you want to support our partnership, kill me now. Kill my people now. What's stopping you? What moral authority is stopping you? Because when this assembly is capitulating to Kotlikoff, when this assembly cannot take a stand or do anything about the student code of conduct, when this assembly has time and time again failed to uphold the values of this so-called liberal and free institution, I ask you, what moral authority is stopping you from killing me? What is? So you have no fear of retribution. You will not get doxxed. Kotlikoff is not going to punch you in the face. And yet, you wait. I was here last year. I was here in 2024. I was here in 2023. Time and time again, I've seen people take pictures of me and my friends for speaking about these things. And yet we're still here telling you to grow a spine or just kill me now. Thank you.
There's a member on Zoom who is wanting a public comment as well. No, it's only one person. You may only go once for public comment, but there's a member on Zoom that may go ahead.
Christian, do you mean me?
Correct.
Wonderful. Can everyone hear me? Okay, I'm going to assume yes. Okay. Hi, guys. Not to completely change the topic, I'm here to talk about the assembly as a whole based on like what's been on the agenda lately. This is disgraceful and embarrassing. I'm not talking about the Palestine resolution. Completely abolish that partnership. The assembly has never not been a joke in my time at Cornell, but somehow it has, like, you guys have been making the reputation worse. I mean, each week the docket has literally been a joke for the most part. There was a resolution, I'm sorry, about cookies. We renamed it to the Shared Governance Assembly. I don't know what, like, what is wrong? I don't know what's going on. I mean, I literally haven't been there. Never thought I would really care my senior spring, but we literally have students' rights to have a say at Cornell at all at permanent risk this semester via the code of conduct. We literally just settled with the Trump deal, jeopardizing students' rights and the future of Cornell for students. The administration, as we speak, is trying to turn spaces like the LLC and OOJ into typical dorms as part of their plan to erase BIPOC spaces as part of that Trump deal. They are literally allowing ICE to recruit via webinars on our campus. And we are not addressing any of that this semester for reasons that are beyond me, but specifically, the most some of you guys have ever argued or spoken up in assembly of your life has been these past 2 days over special projects funding trips. I also, like Hisham, had been on the assembly for numerous years. Special projects funding trips was something new that came about last term, and we have now spent somewhere in the $100,000 ballpark, if not more, on exclusive trips for professional clubs, largely where either a member of the assembly, if not a member of the executive board of the assembly, is a member or someone going on that trip. I mean, we literally gave $5,000 for the Cornell Capital Club to go to the Florida beach, like 10 people, because the deputy of the finance committee and another member of the student assembly are on the Cornell Capital Club. That's disgraceful. We have the highest student activity fee in the Ivy League. You're telling me that 2 months of my groceries is what I'm paying for the student activities fee so that students can go to the Florida beach or New York City or DC rather than enriching on-campus events as like organizations that actually benefit students are currently having their funding jeopardized and cut right now. This is what you are choosing to focus on. And I mean, that's I also was largely joined today to talk about rules. The Representative Ehrlich, I'm sorry, I had to jump in since the parliamentarian's gone. That is a continuing breach. You guys cannot ignore points of order. The chair cannot, I'm sorry, Flournoy, love you. The chair cannot chair when he has previously spoken in favor of the resolution currently being debated on the floor. It is literally a mess. That's what I had to say. Thank you guys. Peace and love. Please get your ever-loving shit together and stop allowing the administration to treat you guys like a joke. I mean, you guys were what, talking to the future of the committee earlier today, saying that you want shared governance to be more respected. And why doesn't the administration listen to us? You That's guys are fine. Treating it like a club. You're a union. Thank you. Bye.
Point of personal privilege.
Recognize.
All right, just so people know, point of personal privilege is something that can be used when members are called out by name or when something that threatens the like individual's like respect on this body are being threatened. So just so people know that. I just want to say, first of all, that I agree with a lot of what Sophia Arnold just said. I don't fully disagree with her. We should be fighting administration more. But I also want people to know, because if she's going to come in here and crap on a bunch of members of this assembly, that the reason she's not here in person right now is because she was removed. She was not reconfirmed for her position because she was in a relationship with a member of assembly as vice president of ethics. Okay.
So, dog, I was director of ethics.
Not recognized.
No, that, yeah. No back and forth.
He's
that
out is, of order to begin that, with. That's personal also, point of personal privilege. Not to address
no, back. You made one motion for personal privilege.
Can
I'm
I, can
to,
I finish
I'm this? Going to recognize, I'm going to recognize.
Christian, you do not have the right to do that. Let him finish his
time. No, he's responding. He's responding.
I mean, he's the chair. He can do kind of whatever he wants unless we overrule him.
Point of order, the point of personal privilege is used for a personal attack. As far as I know, that was not a personal attack. And secondly, the point of personal privilege is used.
That's out of order.
Point of personal privilege is for personal attacks. You can like correct. Google Robert's rules.
Are you
I'm almost done. Okay. I will say, you know, like, I again, I don't disagree with what everything she just said, but like, also some of it was false, right? So like, saying that we're not addressing some of the admin stuff, like we just did a resolution on like fighting back against admin on the resolution 9 thing.
This is out of order. Again, this is completely out of order.
So
I raised the point of
I'm
order.
Literally disproving a criticism she made of her persons, so it's not out of order. But like, if you want to crash out at me like personally later, that's fine. I'm pretty much done now.
Vice President Watkins.
We have byline organizations here who are for here for the student activity fee, which is an essential part of this assembly. And we've wasted their time with procedural nonsense and all of this today. So I move to move Resolution 66 to the top of second reading calendar.
Dissent? Any? Seeing none, those have been moved. That resolution has been moved to the top. You may come to the front. And we are now... Well, we don't have any public hearing. So now we're going to second reading calendar. So resolution 66.
Oh. Yeah. Oh. He wasn't down yet.
All right. Hello, everybody. So the Finance Committee met this past Sunday, and in response to President Kolkoff's rejection of $476 student activity fee, a lot of the increases that we wanted to get out of the organizations or keep the organizations sustained were simply not within our power anymore. And so now we've been told that the student activity fee has to stay at $424. Whereas in previous years, when there were problems with the student activity fee, the VP finance decided to reduce all organizations by the exact same amount so that there wouldn't be much debate. I didn't really think that was appropriate for the student activity fee that we have in front of us. And so the finance committee agreed with that. And so the finance committee has a lot of these updated allocations that are being presented. I'm looking through right now. Some of the ones we need to talk about. I'm not going to go through every single organization because we have a lot to go through today. But you'll notice a lot of organizations who were receiving the increase before are now receiving funding that's the same. A lot of organizations that had funding increased, their increases were either decreased, or their funding increase was completely wiped out. Some of the ones I do want to touch on. We had a lot of discussion about the TACCON Center for New Students at Executive Cabinet. And I do agree that it's really crazy that we have to pay Cornell housing for a week, basically through TACCON. However, the reason we decided not to defund that part of TACCON completely and ask the administration to pay for it is one, because the administration's facing a lot of financial pressure right now, leading us to two, which we're pretty sure that Kolakoff would just tell us no and send it back. And something that I've learned is the financial aid office is literally waiting on the student activity fee to be done before they put out any financial aid notices, which is I think, a big problem for Cornell students, because they need to know if they're able to afford to come to Cornell based on what the financial aid office prepares for them. Another one that I want to touch on, we've decreased student assemblies funding from 275 to 216 when we previously had an increase. There's a few reasons for this. One of them, I think, is we have sizable reserves right now. And a lot of these decreases as well, which we'll talk about later, we're hoping to use our reserves to keep the student activity fee under 424, without completely, without having to cut a lot of things with student activities. Specifically, one of the organizations that's a resolution later on the calendar today is the Multicultural Greek Fraternal Council. I will say what happened with that resolution. I kind of had a miscommunication, and I wasn't actually sure that we had decided upon a number in the finance committee, but the number was 60,000. So when we actually do discuss that resolution, that will be up from 40,000 to $60,000 disbursement to sort of account for their. Other members came up to me, and we did agree to that. Yeah.
Representative
Shadiri. So, lots of things to say here. I do think that, like, as a body, people should like really, really, really take their time to go in and like weigh their thoughts. There's just like not enough time to go through and I think debate each and every one of these points, but I think people have a lot of strong opinions across the board. Some general thoughts for me is number one, I think we should get rid of the $1 increase that we gave the slope day. I don't think there's any functional increase. Like I got the argument before that, like, hey, if we're gonna give Slope Day a big like jump to get them into like a new bracket of like artists they can reach out to, then like, yeah, sure. But a $1 increase to a Slope Day is not gonna change a Slope Day's budget nearly as much as it would to like heavens for a different byline organization as well. The second really big thing I see over here is that I don't think student like if we're in this place right now where we have so many great like byline organizations, I don't think student assembly should get like much money at all. In fact, I'd be more of a favor of cutting even more student assembly money and instead having that go towards other organizations. I, for one, would be completely fa a fan of getting rid of food at meetings and instead having that money go towards other byline organizations as well. We are in financially troubling times, but I do think that means we have to lead by action, and that means that we should cut our own money first for like splurges like food at meetings and instead go and give it to byline organizations that actually go and do a lot of really great and fantastic stuff. The last thing I wanted to say over here is that I do think that I would like to shout out Cornell Minds Matter and GJAC. I think both of them have done some really, really fantastic stuff, and both of them deserve a surplus in the money that they're getting right now, and both than what they're currently having. I see you shaking your head, Christian. We can disagree really fundamentally with that, but I really think both of them have done just tremendous work for campus this year. And they have a lot of initiatives that they've already shown that they need more money. And I think that money can come from other places where we're not spending it right now.
Yeah, you mentioned Cornell and the Minds Matter. We had a meeting with them Wednesday. By far, one of their largest costs is Light Up the Season, which is the lights that's up on the front. However, one of the ways that we were able to keep the student activity fee under 424 is by keeping their allocation consistent. However, the student assembly reserves will be used in the future to fund Light Up the Season, because I think that's something that everybody on campus loves, and nobody wants that to go away. And so that will either be something in the res like later this year, we will set aside money and our own reserves. I'm talking it could be about 120,000. It's a really big chunk of our reserves, and money we have to be really careful with spending. GJAC, we've kind of talked about some concerns about financial tracking within student assembly. There was one of the 2 years that we asked that we didn't have any finances at all for, and so the hope is that this can encourage more deliberate financial tracking in the future. And this is kind of, as President Durham mentioned when we discussed GJAC last time, this has kind of been a reoccurring issue where I think Last byline cycle too, there were concerns, which Rocco had a lot of other issues related to GJAC, but there were some financial tracking problems as well.
Representative Anand.
Yeah, I just want to point
Oh,
out that, like, as you're looking at this, though,
you
like,
can respond. He has the right to
yeah,
respond, yeah.
none of these are, I guess, are taken lightly, and there's, I guess, a reason behind all of them. And the main point you have to consider, I suppose, is that because we're maintaining the same total number of 424, any increase to anyone means a decrease from somewhere else, which is like truly like troubling, like for us. But it just kind of is what President Kolakoff has told us we have to do. So, that's just how it is.
I will also add Student Assembly and Slope Day were two that you mentioned, and I think those were probably two of the most discussed in committee assembly,
I
especially.
mean, the Slope Day one, we did give them, I think, what was it, a 62, $12 increase the first time, and then now we're giving them one. I mean, with the rate of inflation, I don't know, it's like a 2% increase, so.
Representative Ahmed.
Okay, yeah, hi. So, Hayden, Christian, I know you guys do have a really difficult job, so this is not a criticism to either of you. I think you guys do an amazing job, first of all. I need to speak about the Interfaith Council at Cornell, ICC. The president and vice president were here earlier. They had to leave for iftar, which is like a Ramadan thing. And so they were here, they were waiting while all this banter about the revote and everything was going on. Didn't actually get a chance to speak about their issues. And so I think that's really, really unfair to them because they had a lot of really good issues. And they're going to do a much better job than I am the next minute about describing about why they deserve funding. And I really think that you need to hear both of them out. And so I am going to motion to table this resolution for a week. I know that's not what a lot of people want, but I'm going to do it. But first of all, I am going to let you know a little bit about at their current rate. They need $123,000, and their current rate is $20,000 under that. And even with what we have now after the decrease, they still might break even, but maybe not because orgs are moving up in funding tracks, and there will be no flex fund, which the orgs heavily use. And they also get 2 to 3 per year added organizations. They're getting a lot of organizations added. So, and they have to accommodate all religious students' needs, and they're also a primary funding board, one of I think only three on campus, and so. I really think that I'm going to motion to table this resolution for a week because I think it's really unfair that the vice president and president of the Interfaith Council at Cornell, who waited here and sat here, I think, for almost an hour, were unable to voice their opinions and give their entire presentation that they wanted to show, and that they weren't able to do that because of all the banter that went on here. So I think you
Can
don't
we
even need to hear them
respond?
out.
Is there a second?
Second. Point of personal
Is there
privilege.
dissent?
Can
Point
we
of
like.
personal
Okay.
privilege?
Point of personal privilege.
This resolution will effectively be tabled for a week because there's a lot of time constraints next week that we're not going to be sure we're going to discuss the student activity fee completely for, one of which being Kolakoff's visit. Also, I am not completely sure that I am going to be able to be here, so I've already designated my proxy to someone, and I do not want to have the student activity fee moving through assembly while I am not here. So.
That's fair.
Is there
Can
is
I just point of order?
that point of order?
My point of order is that like I've been overusing point of personal privilege. I used it properly earlier, but all the other times you heard me use it the last couple of weeks, I've not been doing it properly. So please stop. I will stop too.
Is there dissent to the motion to table? Okay, so we're now in debate on that motion.
Do you
Rep
want to withdraw it?
Representative Early.
No, I don't.
Okay, so like I'm on the finance committee. I totally get Jai's point. Jay, no, thank you for correcting me. I totally get Jay's point. Completely do. I was a big proponent when we discussed in the committee meeting originally increasing the Interfaith Council's funding at the same time, and I won't get into the specifics of anyone's funding because I can't publicly, but I will say like everyone has reasons why they should get more money. And if you have a problem with the fact that we had to lower a lot of organizations' allocations who got increases originally, you should talk to my good friend Michael Kotlikoff because he's the real reason that this had to happen. He rejected our original student activity fee. I would love for our student activity fee to go up so that we can give some money to international or interfaith council, but we don't have that kind of money, and we still gave them a pretty sizable increase.
Representative
May I
Galpin.
respond to that?
No, because we're no. Representative Anand will be the only one that has right of response because this is his motion. Representative Galpin.
I really appreciate the point that was made, and I really appreciate the work the finance committee is doing. Yes, I agree. Everyone has their reasons they should get more money, but these are people who actually went out of their way to be heard, and then they were not heard. I moved to vote on tabling.
Second.
Any dissent? Okay, so in December, we're going to vote on the motion to end
If we
debate.
move this by
Wait,
another week, that financially
we're
doesn't work.
going to.
I withdraw my dissent.
Okay. So seeing
You can't table this another like a
No,
All
no.
right, so
Okay.
since we
Debate.
this is out of order. Since we have dissent, we're going to vote on the motion to end debate. All those in favor of ending debate, please raise your placards.
This isn't a vote on table, right? This is on whether we're going
Sorry.
to debate on table. Yeah.
To clarify, we're currently voting on whether to end debate on the motion to table. So if you're in favor of ending debate, please raise your placards.
We're not going to table this.
All those opposed? Okay, debate has ended. We are now going to vote on the motion to we're going to vote on the motion to table. All those in favor, please raise your placards. All those opposed? That motion has failed.
Wait, so the one thing I want to bring about ICC specifically, I mean, we are more than happy to speak to. They also emailed us, I think was it earlier today or yesterday or something. Like we're happy to speak to them about it. I mean, I just want you to look like at the percent changes. Like Interfaith Council got a nearly 40% increase, which is like by far the biggest, more than anyone else besides like Alana at 14%. So like,
And collegiate leadership.
yeah, there's just very like we've done them like a big solid here, honestly. And I just don't think we have any room to increase that anymore without snubbing other groups.
I'll also add on to that. The last student activity fee, once again, aside from collegiate leadership, the Interfaith Council got the largest increase at 76.92%. And so when they had that really large increase, which I think they could have done a lot of really good things with. ICC is a really well-run byline. It became harder and harder to justify that 76.92% increase when we have organizations that were like splitting hairs trying to cut.
Representative
Having to
Carson?
cut, not trying.
No, because we're not debating your motion anymore. Representative Carson?
I was gonna say. Oh yeah, I just would agree. I think it sounds like we're gonna have time to debate this more anyway, so like I'm not so since you do all our stuff. But I just curious, like I can't remember what this is, but the collegiate readership program is like the thing where we have like the games, right? I
Yes.
mean, like that seems good, but at the same time, like I don't know. Could we move that to other things? Because I feel like there's some more pressing issues, but maybe not.
Finance, when we talked in finance committee about this, for context, just to reiterate, the Collegiate Readership Program is what funds our subscriptions to the Wall Street Journal and the New York Times. However, the finance committee this year sought to increase our New York Times subscription to include New York Times games. I know that kind of seems like something that's not as important compared to everything else, but I think the reason that the finance committee was really, really passionate about this increase is because it's something that truly affects every student on this campus. And that's not necessarily the case for all these bylines. That doesn't mean the bylines are bad at all. Like they all do such great work, but collegiate readership, like that's something that a lot of people will take advantage of. Like I know I'm playing the Wordle every day. So yeah.
Yeah, I think it's just one of these things that like it seems like a small sort of issue, but like every person on campus has like spoken to me about this, you know, and complaining about how like the mini got blocked and like whatever else. Like it seems kind of like benign and stupid, but I think it could help like, you know, with morale and people would genuinely enjoy this
Also,
change.
people have been frustrated because they feel like the student assembly isn't actually responding to like what students actually want. Like the student assembly getting people New York Times games would be like I think it's genuinely students would like have a lot more goodwill towards the assembly for being able to do that because people who really aren't paying any attention to assembly and aren't coming to these meetings, that's something really good that we can do for them.
Took us a lot of work too, like a lot of negotiating and stuff. So,
Representative Ehrlich.
point of inquiry. Sorry,
I'm just
Wait. Sorry,
sorry.
point of
Really quick,
inquiry.
like a procedural thing. Are we allowed to motion to amend like the numbers on here, or does that like yeah, does that like mess things up altogether? Like,
Can I explain that?
Yeah, go ahead.
It's in the Student Assembly Charter. We had this debate last semester that you have to give an organization at least 2 days' notice before a meeting to any adjustment to their proposed allocation. And initially, we only saw that recommended or reflected in recommendations, which we had to approve first. But that also holds true for the student activity fee as a whole.
So
So
no.
can I, since I was recognized,
Yeah, Representative Early.
okay. So I actually have one thing to say on that, which is that actually I was taught this is interesting. So there was like it was unclear, and the chair made a ruling, and I appealed the chair, and
we lost a two-thirds vote, but I found out recently that we would have needed a majority vote and we would have passed that. So technically, the question is unanswered of whether we can adjust this, but I would prefer that we don't right now. I will say, let me ask the audience, was anyone else really peeved when they got rid of the free New York Times mini? Like, did that bother anyone else? Yeah, I'm seeing some nods. Yeah, that really sucks. And we're trying to pay for students to have access to that, and there's a lot of students that use that, so genuinely a good thing. I move to close debate.
Second.
Is there a dissent? Seeing none, debate is closed. We are now going to vote on passing this to the third
Wait,
recount.
point of order.
Oh, wait, apologies. It does go ahead and move on to third reading calendar. So now we're on to resolution 36. Recognize.
I feel like it's pretty clear that we have a lot of people in the audience who came to find out what happens with Resolution 61 today. I want a motion to move Resolution 61 to the top of second reading now. If everybody's,
Clear. So I'm gonna
yeah.
clarify this. So motions to move resolution order, that has to come from someone on the executive board,
Okay.
according to our governing docs.
Okay. Can someone do it, please?
I can.
Thank
Represent or Vice President Young.
you.
Just to give it a chance, if we voted for a motion to move a Resolution 61 to the top of the second reading
Second.
calendar.
Is there any dissent? Okay, we're now gonna vote on that vote on that motion. All those in favor of moving resolution, what number? 61 to the top, please raise your placards. All those opposed? Any abstentions? Okay, resolution 61 has been moved to the next resolution.
Okay. So. Okay. Hi, guys. Okay. So you all have the resolution in the box. I'm also going to pull it up. I want to touch on a few of the concerns that I heard, the kind of reoccurring during public comment. For one, there are undergrads at Cordell Tech, all the time. I have it right here. For one, we have a Milstein program in technology and humanities. It's an arts and sciences program that sends students over there over the summer to have an immersive experience at Cornell Tech. We also have some other summer programs. There's a 3-week intensive called the Future Builder Studio that teaches about AI. Undergrads are invited to that. We have undergrads doing research there all the time. I know Cornell Tech is big news in the engineering school. Everybody wants to end up there somehow. That's an undergraduate concern when we have an entire school wanting to go work for companies like Lockheed Martin. So I think that this notion that this doesn't concern us is just wrong, plain and simply. And then the other thing I want to touch on was there seems to be a lot of concern about okay, what's going to happen to funding? What's going to happen here? What's the alternative plan? For one, that's not for us to decide necessarily, nor is it for us to write up the plan of how they're going to restructure Cornell Tech. This is a recommendation. It's a recommendation to administration to reconsider their partnership and to start getting into the process of figuring out how to go about it differently. Okay? So this is for that's this is us pushing them to do that. And yeah, you guys can ask your questions now. I'll answer as they come.
Representative Galperin.
I do want to address some of the lies we heard during public comment. First of all, to the not getting doxxed point, the person who made that point commented on an Instagram post in which I was doxxed. So let's put that to bed. Second of all, you use the years, and yes, I mean this isn't directed at you personally. You guys have used Holocaust scholars and the example of the Nazis to talk about why we should adopt this. This is a resolution that is going to the Technion being an Israeli institution, this is going to disproportionately affect Jewish students, and you're going to use the Holocaust against us. My grandfather survived the Holocaust at 6 years old, sitting in a cherry tree while his entire family was gunned down. And what country took in the survivors, not America, not Canada, not Britain, or whatever other countries you guys listed that Tzipi Livni couldn't visit. It was Israel. And it is thanks to those, and it is thanks to that and programs such as the Technion that Holocaust survivors have been able to advance in society. This is ridiculous. The one grad student who came asked us to take our hands off their program. I move to table this indefinitely.
Dissent.
Second.
Is there a second to that?
Second.
Is there dissent?
Dissent.
Okay, we're not going to vote on the motion to table this resolution indefinitely. All those in favor of tabling indefinitely, please raise your placards. All those, opposed? Any abstentions? That resolution fails. We're back in debate. Our Vice President Watkins.
Really quickly, we had a lot of people talking about like if this is under the jurisdiction of another assembly. And so for that, I draw our attention to Section 4A of the Student Assembly Charter, lines 77 through 81, which says, should another assembly object to an action of the Student Assembly at its next business meeting, there's the process for student assembly. A student assembly determines by 2/3 vote that the action of another constituency body impacts its constituency. Comparable procedures for the reconciliation of the differences will be pursued. Essentially, if another assembly feels that their constituency is what's impacted by another assembly's action, they can take a vote internally into that assembly. So I felt that kind of discussion wasn't necessarily a part of the discussion we needed to be having. It's more so a discussion for like the GPSA if they decided they want to object to this resolution.
Yes, and to use my right of response here, I have sent this resolution to GPSA. I'm still waiting on a response, but I sent it to them about a week ago.
Representative Kasi.
I think it is an honor to be somewhere like Cornell, and it is an honor to have any Cornell name on anything that I do. And this is my opinion on both this one and I think Resolution 55. When we allow people who have committed war crimes or allow the Cornell name to continue to get involved in the murder of innocent people, then we are smearing the Cornell name and smearing the honor that it feels to be a Cornellian. I know it's really easy to just be like, oh, it doesn't matter. It's not impacting undergraduate students, but it does impact us. It does, and it will, even 30 years from now, when people are looking back on what it means to be a Cornellian now, right? It, the way Cornell presents itself to the real world impacts the honor that we feel to go here. It means a lot to be at this school, and it is a privilege to be at this university. And this university, the students at this university deserve to have that privilege and that honor respected, included by those of in charge at this university. And these actions, and we can tell by the students who constantly, years on end, come and protest these actions, are dishonoring us. And that's why it is just as much of our business to be part of this as it is our business to worry about free laundry. Because the actions that this university takes, even outside of this school, reflect us. Thank you.
Response?
No, it's fine.
Okay, Representative Ehrlich.
A couple things. First of all, you know, a lot of graduate programs like are programs that students don't pay for, right? And obviously Cornell Tech has money. So like, let's be clear, like my tuition dollars go to Cornell Tech. So I won't allow this assembly to basically be silenced on an issue because it affects grad students. That's our money. That's students' money. Ezra, you were doxxed while you were running for public office. That's different. Also, like, they shouldn't have brought up the Holocaust. That was tactically dumb. But you know what? And it was wrong. But you know what else was tactically dumb? Was basically feeding information on a version of a resolution that actually has never seen the light of day to people doing public comment and then forgetting you did that and then having them say the information that you fed to them. So good job. So frankly, I think it's clear what the members of this body think about this resolution. Clearly, we should not be tied to Technion Israel. It's an organization that supports the war crimes that we'll be talking about in a different resolution later. So frankly, I think this is pretty much, I think we're clear where everyone is. I move to close debate.
Second.
Is there any dissent? Seeing none, debate is closed. This has moved on to third reading calendar. Thank you. Resolution 36.
And we're just going to motion to table Res 36 until next week. All right.
Okay. Is there a second?
Three.
Wait, go ahead.
Am I allowed to say that I would smile favorably on someone moving the special projects requests up in the order?
Well, we have a motion on the floor.
Just motion to table Res 36 until next week.
Is there a second? Dissent? Seeing none, that resolution is tabled. We are now on to free laundry. Representative Galperin.
I move to move the special projects request.
You got it. It must, you're, yes, you're.
We're what about the ones in second reading? Can we move to move them up to first priority on the second? Can I make that motion?
Sorry?
Someone from exec ought to do that.
Never mind.
Representative Adequ- or Vice President Adequai.
Motion to move the special projects resolution to third reading calendar.
Oh my God.
Up in the second reading calendar, my bad.
So all of them up in the agenda.
Are they all?
Yeah.
Sure. Restate.
Wait, motion to move the... Motion to move resolution 64 and 65 up into second reading calendar.
You're already in second reading calendar.
The front, at the top.
Yeah.
Is there a second?
Seconds.
Is there dissent? We will discuss it after resolution 60.
Yeah. Go ahead. Question, mode of concern. I thought this would be on the third reading calendar because it was discussed at the end of the last meeting.
So we were not able to vote on it last meeting. So as a result of that debate not actually ending, it remained on second reading.
Okay.
Okay, Representative Ehrlich.
Okay. Yeah, basically this resolution is just because Cornell is already constantly increasing fees every single year by more than 4%, that with this increase in fees, we should make it a point to add an increase just so we can have like consistent free laundry and put laundry on our cost of attendance. That way it's no longer a hidden fee and students can pay for it up front and actually know what they get to before they get on campus. And I can answer any questions.
Representative Shigeri.
First off, fantastic start. I think there's just so many things that we talk about like wanting to do and like we never actually end up doing it. So I'm really happy to see this here. I do think this resolution can like get a lot of work and like meeting it, like meet added to it before end of third reading calendar, because I don't want it to just go to Kotlikoff and Kotlikoff be like, oh yeah, we are like student leadership, SEL is already like going and like thinking about this.
Yeah.
So two quick things to note. The first one, like real define hidden fees, like literally like go leak a legal document with it and like be like, this is like what the Cornell website looks like. This is like what it says. Cause technically like they're going to be like, oh, if you Google is Cornell laundry free, it's going to pop up as like, no, which is true. But you're absolutely right in the fact that like, it's not like broadly advertised like that. The second is I would actually propose a way in there of like estimating how much laundry costs per student. Cause they're going to be like, oh, different students do a different amount of laundry based off like how much like clothes or whatever. Just give them a number or like something like that, that like would be like reasonable to like tack onto the front and say like, hey, like this is like what should be happening. And I would also add like a be it like resolve clause at the end to say that like there should be some way we work this into the budget that we make our laundry machines free in the first place. Like, yes, that's a long-term goal and not realistic right now, but it absolutely should start the conversation, which is what this resolution is doing. So just those three quick things I think should be added.
And just in response, because I know before there were talks about how realistic this was, is that for now, as I've spoken to Keaton, who's in charge of these discussions with the Board of Housing, this is more so once we get this passed in the assembly, instead of this going directly to Kotlikoff, it would be something used for me to go meetings with the Housing Committee and actually find a solid, concrete, like agreeable solution in the first place. I mean, and that's why there's not like a direct number on there just yet.
1 second.
I don't think we have four.
He's getting caught on.
Yeah, so we don't have quorum. So we can't. We still don't have quorum, even with Haley.
It's over there.
We still don't. Let me recount one more time, but.
I mean, what I'll say is, like, you don't actually need
this. This is out of order.
Wait, what's happening?
Meeting, so.
This is out of order. Apologies.
We have
17. We're at 17. So if we lose one more person, we will be at.
Point of information: if people could like text their friends to like even just like hop on Zoom, even if they're like camera off, mic off, that would be very, very, very helpful.
We could text. Representative, he left. Okay. Representative Ehrlich.
I'm not sure people count on Zoom.
Well, I'll say something about the I think you should do it. Work on what Ishan said. We need to get moving on some other stuff, especially the special projects, because these folks have been here for a long time waiting so they can get their requests decided on. I'll also say
Just to everyone here, and hopefully other people will hear this. I mean, like Sophia was right earlier. There's some clown behavior here. The fact that people are leaving assembly early, like you were fucking elected to serve in this position. I hope that this gets back to the people who have left. You were elected to serve in this position. Like I cherish, I genuinely cherish every moment I'm here at assembly because I was elected to do this for the people that I serve, and everyone should feel that way. Even the moments when I'm getting yelled at by Sophia Arnold on the Zoom, I love it. So, like, please, like, can people stay at the fucking meetings? Okay. Yeah. All right. I move to close debate.
Is there a second?
Second.
Is there dissent? Seeing none, debate is closed. This moves to third reading calendar. Now we will be discussing resolution 64, approving special projects for IDAC.
Bongra.
Bongra. Bongra.
Hi, I'm from Cornell Bunger. I'm one of the presidents. I'm joining through Zoom, but my co-president Dorothy and I are on Zoom just to talk a little more about our project or our event.
I may ask really quick, could you just like give a quick rundown for everybody about like what this project is?
Yeah, for yeah. Sure. So we hold an event every year called Pow Bhangra. And so essentially it's our annual cultural exhibition and one of the longest running cultural dance showcases at Cornell. So this year is going to be its 23rd year. Our dance team, we dance a form of dance called Bhangra. It's a joyful, energetic dance that originated in the region of Punjab in India and Pakistan. So we kind of are hoping to engage and share Punjabi culture, be a supportive network of friends, and really that's what we aim to promote through this event.
So Pow Bhangra, which is Saturday, March 7th at 7 p.m. in Barton Hall, is a large-scale cultural event that celebrates Punjabi culture, dance, community. Each year, we invite collegiate Bhangra teams from across the country. So this year, we have MIT, Buffalo, Binghamton, and Princeton coming up to Ithaca to perform alongside Cornell Bhangra, creating an incredible night of performances and cultural exchange. On average, we host 4 visiting teams, and then the event typically brings in over 800 attendees from both the Cornell and Ithaca community. Looking at our ticket sales right now, we're on track to meet that estimate. The total cost, so part of the reason we're requesting the special projects funding is the total cost of hosting POW this year is estimated to be around $25,000. And this is really largely due to production, lighting, venue, and travel supporting for visiting teams. I'd like to importantly note that Cornell Bhangra does not profit from this event at all. So in fact, all of our proceeds from ticket sales through Vivenu are donated to Ithaca Welcomes Refugees, which is a local nonprofit that supports refugee families in our community. Because of this mission, we intentionally kept ticket prices extremely low. So we're spending, our ticket sales are $3 per show ticket. And that's really so that the event remains accessible to students and community members alike.
Yeah. And so we kind of are coming to Student Assembly with the Special Projects Fund and requesting that because we do think that our event kind of aligns with Student Assembly's mission of supporting events that are both benefit and are accessible to the broader Cornell and Ithaca community. So we really hope to create a space where students, Ithaca residents, and visiting performers are able to come together, celebrate culture in a community that is in a way that's welcoming and inclusive. So for a lot of audience members, POW is like their first exposure to Punjabi culture and Bhangra dance. We also like to flash mob before the event so people kind of get a taste of like what it is. And it really just provides an opportunity to share traditions and music in a really engaging and energetic form. So we hope to really through this event build a bridge between Cornell students and the Ithaca community. And that's really been central to POW since its founding. With your support through the Special Projects Fund, we will be able to continue this 23-year tradition, maintaining the accessibility of the event and maximizing the funds that we're able to donate to Ithaca Welcomes Refugees. I think, one, it's a real privilege to be in this conversation, listening in on the meeting minutes of what you guys have been talking about in this agenda. I think I've noticed a trend of just focusing on community aspects of Cornell, making it so that people feel like they belong here. And I think Cornell Bhangra does that a lot by emphasizing POW Bhangra as a community event, bringing in Cornell people, Ithaca people, and that this is just an event of spreading joy and having a good night of
finding something new and learning what Bhangra and Punjabi culture is. So in that way, we really resonated with a lot of the things that were spoken about today. But that's what we would like to initially share about the event and our organization. And we're open to any questions that you guys have.
I'll add on to this. From a VP finance perspective, I think this is one of my favorite applications that we've had this year. It's on campus. It serves a lot of students on this campus. I'll also say working with like some of the leaders of this organization in a byline capacity, that it is they are really well run, I'm sure. So I'd encourage us, even though I can't move myself to close debate, I encourage people to close debate pretty quickly.
Representative Shadari.
Pow is awesome. I go every year. Go Bhangra. Motion to close debate.
Is there a second?
Second.
Is there dissent? Seeing none, we're going to vote on the motion to close debate.
Sure.
All those in favor of closing
Wait,
debate?
I'll withdraw. Licorice.
Okay,
Yeah.
motion withdrawn. Vice President Young. It's ordered.
I thought there was no
No, there's not. It's the order at which everyone's been raising their placards. I've been keeping track.
I was going to move to close debate, but it's all right though. I'll just say very quickly, it's a great event on campus. Y'all been crying about wanting events on campus. This is a great one on campus. I'll yield my time to Christian Toronto.
Okay, look, I just have a couple questions. That's all. My only concern here is like, look, I really I think this is a great event. I have plenty of friends that attend. It's great. My question is, if this has been going on for 23 years, why is it a special project that we are funding now? And especially if they also charge students to attend the event, it just doesn't seem something like I want to fund that. But how has it been funded in the past? Why is it not able to be funded this year if it's been going for 23 years? That's my main concern.
Yeah, I totally get that. So, the main reason that our costs are so much larger this year is that we are moving back to Barton Hall, back to the Cornell community, where in the past year, specifically last year, we were able to reduce costs and not require funding from external organizations like SA, which is traditionally not for organizations that are independent of Cornell. But because we are in Barton Hall, we are requiring a stage setup, which is costing us 14.8K alone just for the stage setup. So, bringing it back to the Cornell community, which was really important to us, making sure Cornell knows who we are, what this tradition is, what this event is, that we are really strong and proud to be representing the Cornell community. If we're saying we're a Cornell event, it was really important for us to be back at Cornell. But because of that, our costs are significantly greater this year. So we are funded through SAFC. We're getting 10K for the event alone from SAFC. See you tonight, Alana, and ISA. But that is not enough to cover the event. So, which is why we're requesting 5K, through y'all.
No, I think, like I said, this is a really wonderful event. And Student Assembly always needs to have better PR, I think. And this would be a really great event for us to be able to stamp our approval on.
Representative Early. Oh, wait, did you want to?
Yeah, just quickly, Hayden, to echo that point, I think this year we've placed a real emphasis on sponsoring or media advertising our sponsors. So we've been doing media coverage, and all of our quarter cards hold our sponsors. I know almost all of the funding organizations on campus require that, but I know not many organizations actually, put the logos on our quarter cards and flyers and media posts. But that was really important to us this year because we're very grateful to the funding that we get. So we have been doing that for all of our funding sources and are excited to do that with SA should we be funded through y'all.
Representative Ehrlich.
Let's all make sure we're being as concise as possible for the rest of the meeting. We have three more special projects requests and we have 10 minutes, and I would hate to force people to come here for 3 hours for nothing. I move to close debate.
Any dissent? Seeing none, this passes on to third reading. Go ahead, recognize.
So last semester there was a resolution table at the request of the author, so I'm asking to do that again, that President Durham approved, because there was some late communication on my part with YDSA while I was working with the student activity fee. So this would be a special projects request that we would discuss next week with them.
Second.
All right, is there a second?
Second.
Any dissent? We will now go to Resolution 62. Vice President Young.
Motion to move resolution 54 and 53 to the top of the agenda.
For third reading?
Yeah, from the third reading
Is there a
calendar.
second?
Wait, yeah, wait,
Second.
point of, I don't think you can move third reading ahead of second reading.
We've moved the entire third reading.
No. She's not. The motion isn't to move it above second reading. It's just in the order of third reading.
Okay, yeah,
Is that,
perfect. Yeah.
Wait, no, the motion was to put it at the top of the agenda.
Okay. Well,
You can't.
is there a second for that?
There is second, and also we've moved all of third reading of ahead of second reading before.
No, like you can't like flip-flop, so you're
Is
gonna be
there
all
a
third.
second? Is there dissent? Is there dissent?
It's just parliamentary. It's like not like the
Okay,
Senate. Like you
well,
can't.
I'll withdraw and instead motion to move the entire third reading calendar to
Yeah.
above the second reading calendar.
Yeah.
Is there a second for
Second.
that? Is there?
Wait, point of inquiry.
We're in the middle of it, unfortunately.
Representative Chaudhuri, Representative Chaudhuri, go ahead, present your resolution.
Hi. So speaking of money, this is something that the Student Assembly should actually do with the money that we have without giving it out to another organization altogether. So Sonia, as the chair of the Student Health Advisory Committee, has been doing a lot of communication with Cornell Health about the vending machine on North Campus that has all the health-related products. Now through a lot of back and forth with admin, we found like we've actually gotten a quote from them in terms of how much it actually costs to buy a vending machine like this and to stock it. But the problem is that we're not allowed to pay for labor. So this is going to be a completely committee-led initiative where we're going to have the Student Health Advisory Committee go and actually stock these vending machines once a semester. We're proposing to add two more health vending machines, one on West Campus, one on College Town, both in dorms. So we're thinking probably like, I don't know, like Cask plus like one of the West dorms as well. In general, just really good idea to spend Student Assembly money on something that will actually benefit the student body. The student health machine on North gets tons of usage as well. It's great PR. And in my opinion, I think it's just something that we should be enhancing a little bit more of and getting our committees a little bit more active. And this is a great thing for the Student Health Advisory Committee to uphold.
Vice President Watkins.
First off, really briefly, YDSA is actually here, so I'd like to put that back on there right after this. Very sorry about that. Second of all, I do really like this, but I do have some hesitation, simply because a lot of the bylines right now, the way we were able to get them under or get the student activity fee back to 424 is because we're having to use our reserves to supplement that. However, I do believe this is a really great thing that we could do on our campus. So I'm not like speaking out against that. I just wanted to make sure that was something that we considered in the discussion about like how to use this money in the future. But like I said, this is something that is, I think, really, really good and would be also a great use of the money and something great that Student Assembly could do for our campus.
Yeah, I don't know. In my opinion, I think there's better ways to solve the byline like problem that we can talk about like as we go through. And I think there's other ways you can cut it, but I don't think it's fair to weigh that against something like this, which I do think sets a really good precedent in terms of using Student Assembly money and Student Assembly reserves for a Student Assembly-led project, which is absolutely something we should be doing all the time, and it's ridiculous we haven't been doing right now already. Yeah.
Also through Shaq, like genuinely, I've had so we like I've tabled for other like projects through Cornell Health. This is definitely one of the biggest issues that students on all over College Town, West Campus have brought up to me multiple times, even to officials at Cornell Health. So I do think this is something we should really prioritize. Thank you.
Representative Doran.
I think this is a great idea, and I just wanted to bring up maybe have y'all considered applying for the infrastructure fund because we have a lot of money, and maybe if you bought the vending machines through the infrastructure fund and then you just use Student Assembly money to stock it, that might be something that would be worthwhile.
So we're not allowed to apply to the infrastructure fund via another committee.
Yeah, but
It's
you could get.
so like as individuals, Sonia and I could apply into the infrastructure fund, but then that would mean the responsibility of stocking and maintaining and the ordering of the vending machines, that entire jurisdiction would belong as to like Ishan Chaudhary and Sonia Agarwal, like as people, not as like Student Assembly representatives. It wouldn't belong to the assembly, nor would like the responsibility carry over from year on year. We're trying to create an infrastructure here that would last so that regardless whoever's on assembly, they'd be able to go through it. Regardless whoever is on Shaq would be able to go and do it, which is why we're trying to do it through these means rather than infrastructure fund. But yeah, again, great idea. If we want to do some like transferring of funds internally, that could be something we could consider, but I think we have enough money already in our reserves to go and do this right now.
Vice President Young.
I really just had a quick point of inquiry. For the infrastructure fund, isn't it that an organization can apply to the infrastructure fund? And if the student assembly is considered a student organization, technically, can we not apply to the infrastructure fund?
Because it would be in complete conflict, because we like how voting on the infrastructure fund, I only know this because on infrastructure fund last year, how voting on infrastructure fund works is if you have any like relation to the organization that is proposing to be added on, like onto it, you have to like excuse yourself from voting. But there would be a conflict of interest because everyone on infrastructure fund is adjacent to student assembly in some regard. So it just creates an internal like basically you can't use infrastructure fund as a way to funnel money through the bureaucracy of student assembly, which is why instead we're going through this path. But it's like if we really wanted to, we could go and take the same 20,000 out of infrastructure funds like backlogs into our executive account and then it put that in the Shaxx account if we wanted to do that instead of touching reserves, which is something we'd be open to. But I think infrastructure fund already serves a really great purpose on campus. There's other projects and other people applying as well. I can't really like speak to the status of that right now. That's probably more Grace's alley. But again, like something we're open to, but we just want to get this funded.
Vice President Watkins.
Kind of to add on to that really quick too, student assembly, this is like really dumb bureaucratic stuff that we'd have no reason to know, but student assembly isn't a registered like student organization. We're a university department, and so because of that, we're not considered a student organization that's able to apply to infrastructure fund.
We would smile favorably upon a motion to end debate.
Sec. Representative Rowett.
I move to close debate.
Is there a second? Any dissent? Okay, seeing none, that's moved on third reading calendar. Vice President Watkins.
Seeing as YDSA actually is here, I move to put Resolution 65 back on second reading calendar right now.
Second.
Second.
Any dissent? Seeing none, we're going to put it back, discuss that now. Reminder, meeting time ends at 7:30. We have 4 minutes.
Hi, hello. I'm just here to answer questions. Everything's like in the proposal, so yeah.
Representative Shaduri.
Second.
Any dissent? Seeing none, pass the third
Thank
reading.
you.
Now resolution 63. I realize we only have like
Hi, totally willing to talk about this next time. And also, if we don't have any other time to get to other resolutions, that's like okay if we don't want to like finish voting on it because I'd rather people consider it. I basically just think that the university admin do a really, really bad job of surveys on campus and collecting student data. That's just because we have a lot of these really important like surveys, like the sexual assault survey, the student health survey, the like housing surveys, things like that, that collect like really good behavioral data about like how students like go through these processes and their feelings afterwards. But they have really, really, really low response rates. Like anything from like 2% to like 9% of the student body like fills these things out because it's hard to convince undergrads to fill out a survey when there's nothing really of benefit to them. And because of that, that gives them really poor data that then therefore goes and makes them make really bad decisions, in my opinion. So the solution to this that I've come up with is I want to like honor September like something as like National Research Day and create a university-wide movement across campus to create like a big like 3-hour window where we encourage as many undergraduates as possible to fill out a big 45-minute long survey that combines a lot of these other sub-surveys inside of them to get higher response rates across the board for all of university admin to then go and suggest like better policy as well. There'll be incentive structures via like housing, like different dorms will they like, compete. There'll be prizes that the colleges can link into, academic colleges as well. It'll be a big support of like undergraduate research on campus, considering everything that's happening right now. In my opinion, I think it's a really elegant solution to a really messy problem. I'm happy to look for any suggestions, but yeah, willing to hear your thoughts.
Representative Ehrlich, we have less than two or almost 2 minutes.
Yeah, I'm very aware of that. I think that the concept is actually really good. I haven't looked at the specifics close enough yet, and there's no reason we should be passing this without having more people here to have a discussion. I think it'll pass when we do that because I think it's great. So I'm going to move to adjourn. There's nothing we can do right now.
So, okay, then yeah. So the motion to adjourn is like a privileged motion. So we do have to respect that.
Would you prefer that I don't? I just think that there's nothing else we're gonna get done by now.
I'm not fighting it. I like
Is
I
there a
have
second
something to say.
to the motion to adjourn?
Second.
Dissent? Seeing none. All right. Meeting has been adjourned 7:29. Oh, what?
We lost
No, it's like we said that 30 seconds left.